takes an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world to its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Beat it up an ox. Speak grunt. No stream. The matter starts to clatter with fear. Fight down. High wire and a fire. Representative engaged in a government for hire at a combat site. Left to us are coming in a hurry with the fury speeding down. Your neck. Keep my team reporters double trumped.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The first presidential debate received unexpected attention as hundreds of people formed a symbolic unemployment line outside the University of Miami Convocation Center where the debate was being held. Waving pink slips of paper in a single-filed line, both unemployed and employed workers were seeking to send a message to the presidential candidates. Denny Frand, Executive Director of People for the American Way in New York.
This is not the number one issue that's being discussed. It's a lot about, it's more about Iraq and it's more about terrorism. But this is an issue. This is one of three that Americans really care about and where they will think about when they go to the polls. So it's a reminder.
The AFL-CIO has also helped organize the 18-minute event, which sought to highlight the jobs crisis in the U.S. Frand says that national attention needs to be drawn to the more than 8 million people without employment.
They will get a very simple message that will not be addressed in probably any debate. The president had stated after 9/11 that he was going to create over 5 million new jobs, and they've lost a million.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger terminated three bills on Wednesday that would have stemmed the flow of state jobs to India. One of the bills would have prevented any state work from moving overseas. Another would have prevented any work relating to Homeland Security from moving overseas, and a third would give consumers control over where their medical records were stored. Schwarzenegger said the bills would not make the homeland any safer, state and federal laws already protect medical privacy, and that the bills would be detrimental to job creation in the state. Democrats accused the governor, who accepted $3.7 million in campaign contributions from companies that have moved work overseas, of bowing to corporate interests. Two other bills are currently on his desk. One would require private employers to submit data to the state on work moved offshore, and the other would force call centers to disclose their location to any California caller who asks.
After last night's debates, presidential candidate John Kerry spent the night in a hotel 20 minutes away from the University of Miami. The reason, according to the Miami Herald, was to mobilize organized labor by staying in a union-owned hotel. Kerry settled on the Sheraton Bal Harbor, even though many hotels surround the university area. The Bal Harbor was the closest that employs a majority staff of union labor. The campaign booked more than 300 of the resort's 645 rooms. President George W. Bush and his staff, meanwhile, chose the non-unionized Four Seasons Hotel.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A repeal of the federal estate tax could leave charities mourning. According to a new report from the Congressional Budget Office, if a repeal does occur, overall charitable giving could decline as much as 12% and charitable bequests as much as 30%. According to Lee Ferris, a member of Responsible Wealth, an organization that monitors economic equality, a repeal could cost the U.S. Treasury $1 trillion over the next two decades. The estate tax is currently slated to be eliminated for 1 year in 2010.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We were given these ideas that there's weapons of mass destruction, but where are the weapons of mass destruction? They said they were so sure where they were, but where are they? When we were over there, we looked around. I was on an intelligence gathering team. We looked in scientific installations. We never found anything. And it was just a lie. And that wasn't a proper use of American troops. That wasn't a proper use of my life or my friends' lives or the Marines who I've seen die around me. It's not a proper use.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement. Get ready for the storm surge. I don't mean the floodwaters from the horrific hurricanes that have been battering our country, but the surge of clothing and textiles flooding into our land from China, drowning what remains of our own industry and wiping out entire American communities. But don't blame the Chinese. Such U.S. retailers as Walmart, Gap, and Nike led the rush to China years ago to build that country's now booming textile industry on the backs of dirt cheap labor, including sweatshops, child labor, and forced labor. It was these same corporations that pushed U.S. politicians to go along with the creation of the sovereignty-busting outfit called the World Trade Organization. The secretive, autocratic WTO, based in Geneva, has established global corporate rule over our jobs, farms, environment, food, and even our laws. If, for example, we pass quotas and other laws to ensure the economic well-being of our textile families and towns, the manufacturers in China can run to the WTO and overrule our laws. This, in essence, is what has happened. And next year, our clothing and textile markets will be thrown wide open to a tsunami of Chinese-produced goods. American families stand to lose 600,000 more manufacturing jobs as a result. Meanwhile, Chinese workers are not benefiting. Wages are reported to be falling even as productivity rises, and Walmart, Gap, Nike, and the rest laugh all the way to the bank. Now, in this political year, the politicians are scrambling, putting out all sorts of hot rhetoric to try to cover the fact that they are the ones who opened the gates with their blind support of the WTO. Feebly, the Bush White House is reduced to pleading with Chinese officials to voluntarily restrict their clothing exports to the U.S. No, say Chinese officials, noting that to do so would be, quote, a breach of the WTO. This is Jim Hightower saying, our own corporate and political leaders sold America out to the WTO.
The Chicago Underground Daily calls it an amazing cinematic wonder, spellbinding.
My daughter, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Father, you must remain strong, for I bring good news.
Oh, you bring good news?
Yes, I just save a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens, Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Happy Friday, October 1st. 32 days to regime change, a change that looks increasingly probable. It's the first hour of our Friday program, noon Eastern time here, as we echo across the country, and time for Brunch with Bernie, our regular Friday afternoon segment with Congressman Bernie Sanders. In 1991, Bernie Sanders became the first independent congressman elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in 40 years. He has since been reelected five times. He's the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. Welcome, Bernie.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It's great to have you here. And if any of our listeners would like to tune in, first of all, you can drop into our chat room. In fact, I see one of our members from Tokyo, Japan just dropped in. You can drop into the chat room by going to TomHartman.com. If you'd like to call into the program, if you have questions or comments for Congressman Sanders, our number 1-866-889-8894. And Bernie, before we go any further, what did you think of the debate last night?
Well, I was on a plane during the debate, but I was able to catch snatches of it, reruns of it, when I got home. It seemed clear to me that Kerry won the debate. What was most interesting to me and speaks volumes about the weakness and corruption of our political system, what was really amazing, George Bush had to really answer some questions in front of millions of viewers, and he had somebody who was posing the questions and somebody who was responding to him who actually knew something. And yeah. Karl Rove and the Republican strategists have spent years and years trying to create scenarios by which Bush does not have to deal with reality. It's not just that they, as you know, Tom, that they don't have press conferences, or when they do, these questions are pathetically weak questions. When they hold their rallies and their so-called town meetings, you have to pledge that you're going to vote for the president and ask him a softball question before you're allowed in there. So what was really interesting is America had a chance to see their commander-in-chief, the most powerful person in the world, on a stage where he had to answer real questions and had to discuss real issues with somebody who knew something. And you know what? President didn't do too well.
No, he looked like a deer in headlamps. I mean, he had that Alfred E. Newman look on his face through at least
half
the thing.
And just think about what the politics of our country would be if we had a media and a political system which required that the most powerful person in our country actually participate in real debates more than once every 4 years.
Oh, yeah, like Prime Minister's questions.
Exactly.
You know, it's,
it would be interesting to see how well Bush would hold up. And I think, you know, one of the things that the Republicans always say, they say, look, hey, you know, we know it. George Bush is not, you know, he's not the most articulate lawyer type. And the way he's just a plain, down-to-earth guy, you know where he stands. But you know what? I don't think that mythology came across last night. What you found is, what is scary about it is not just he lost the debate. That's one thing. But this is a guy around whom decisions of life and death for this planet are being made. And you know what? He don't know a whole lot.
Yeah, and I have a list here of 17 essentially lies that he told last night. I mean, this is just misstatements is how they referred to it. But, you know, like we brought the AQCon network to justice, right? You know, the Pakistani scientist who was selling nuclear secrets. Nobody has ever been prosecuted for that. Nobody. Not even AQCon. And,
well,
the really important point,
I mean, a couple of points. Here in Vermont, the second largest paper in the state is the Rutland Herald front page, quote, Iraq is getting worse and worse, which is a quote from an Iraqi, and, you know, the terrible tragedies that are taking place there. And what Bush is doing is denying what the intelligence agencies are saying, is that the situation there is very, very serious. It is likely to become even worse. We are not winning the war over there. And equally important, you know, he talks about capturing or killing a number of al-Qaeda leaders. You know, that's one thing. But what he doesn't understand is al-Qaeda is an amorphous organization which keeps growing new heads every day. And we're now seeing, according to intelligence folks, cells in some 60 countries around the world. And, in fact, our presence in Iraq is making a very difficult and bad situation even worse. Terrorism, in my view, nobody should underestimate it, is very serious business. You got some fanatical people out there who would be prepared to blow up innocent Americans, innocent people all over the world. It's serious business. And everybody wants to confront and defeat terrorism. But unfortunately, in my view, and I think more and more Americans perceive this, what this president is doing is in many ways counterproductive. And I think that's the point that Kerry managed to get out last night.
Yeah, and that Americans are beginning to realize. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, John in Pennsylvania, is on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
How are you?
Great. What's up?
I just have one thing about the debate. I thought Kerry won the debate. He mopped up the floor with them. Only thing is, he scored a 90 and he needed to score a 92, because the one thing that keeps holding him back is the whole flip-flop issue. I really don't think that he delved into it enough before the debate to dispel every single flip-flop, and they all have an explanation. And during the debate, that was really all Bush had to fall back on. He just kept repeating the same crap over and over and over again.
Right.
He sounded stupid to me because I knew it was nothing, but to the unsuspecting voter, a lot of them still think he has a flip-flop issue, and I was wondering what your opinion is on that, on the campaign not really addressing that full head-on and knocking it out of the water, because the Republican media noisemakers right now are just trying to go after any little glitch in his speech to try to create more flip-flops.
Well, John, I agree with your point. I think it's an excellent point. But I kind of think last night that the president looked very, very weak. You know, you could talk about, you can put your 30-second negative ads on, and you could try to destroy somebody's character, and you could lie about what they did in Vietnam. But you know what? When you're up there on the stage, and this guy is saying, this is my view, Mr. President, mm-hmm. what's your view? A lot of that fades into the distance. It is very clear that Karl Rove and the Republicans are extraordinarily effective in knowing how to destroy people, how to create so-called flip-flop thing. And to some degree, believe me, Kerry's votes have helped them do that. But the truth is, when you're in the Senate or in the House of Representatives, you cast a lot of difficult votes. So I do agree with you. I think Kerry has got to be stronger in defining what he believes in, not only in Iraq, but his vision for America. But no question to my mind that last night he won that debate, and he took his candidacy a significant step forward.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, John. Good to hear from you there in Pennsylvania. 14 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-4, our toll-free number. Dave in Humboldt County, California on the line. Hey, Dave, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Good morning, and thank you so much for your insights, both of you. One point in the debate that I thought was very significant and seems to have gone unnoticed, and that is that Bush was speaking about his plans for an exit strategy for getting out of Iraq, and it went back to Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
And Kerry's comment was, but then you are building 14 of the world's largest military bases in Iraq. That's going to cause some people to leap to the wrong conclusion. Well, to me, that's significant. It's saying you have no plans of getting out at all. You're there to protect
your
government.
Well, maybe leap to the right conclusions.
Yeah.
Is what Kerry should have said. And the right conclusion is that there is widespread speculation in the Middle East that Iraq, in many ways, becomes a foothold for American corporate interests and oil interests to control that part of the world. And that I think Kerry did make the point that it's absolutely imperative. He was nicer than I think I would have been. But certainly we are not going to win the war on terrorism unless the people in the Muslim world, in the Middle East, understand that most Americans do not want to dominate the oil industry in the Middle East. We don't want the natural resources of Iraq or of other countries. And certainly with Halliburton's role and the role of the oil companies, many people in the Middle East and Iraq believe that to be the case.
You know, but Bernie, at the same time, they see us, driving Hummers and having ads for all these SUVs and conspicuous consumption, 4% of the world's population consuming 25% of the world's oil and doing nothing. At least that's visible from the Middle East, about reducing our oil consumption. Isn't it a logical conclusion on their part that,
I think it is a logical conclusion that is, Bush is an oil guy. He's surrounded by oil people. And there's a lot of evidence that, to a significant degree, this war is about oil.
Yeah.
Clearly, I mean, your point is well taken that it's a somewhat separate issue, but that as a nation, we continue in the year 2004 with all of the technology out there, continue to be dependent not only on fossil fuel but Middle East oil is absolutely insane. The fact that we're driving on average automobiles that get less mileage per gallon than we used to, that we haven't gone forward with hydrogen fuel cell cars and with other type of hybrid automobiles, that we are not going as fast as we should in terms of wind power or solar energy or other sustainable energy is totally, I wouldn't use the word crazy. It's that happens because of the power of the fossil fuel industry, oil, gas, nuclear, and so forth.
Yeah.
But the potential right there is there now to break our dependence on fossil fuel.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you won't use the word crazy, I will. I think it's crazy.
But it's not crazy. There's a reason behind it.
And
that
sure.
Is obviously,
yeah.
Folks are making huge sums of money from the old types of energy.
Yeah, and in that case, it's corrupt. It's beyond crazy.
Corrupt, but not crazy.
Let's go to Matt in Daytona Beach, Florida, 1-866-889-8894. Matt, you're live and on the air.
Good afternoon, Tom. Good afternoon, Congressman.
Hey.
I have a quick question for you, and this is going to bring it back to domestic policy. During Bush's acceptance speech, he mentioned that he thought that small businesses should have the opportunity to bind together and purchase health insurance as the way that large companies do.
Yep.
And I was wondering, is there really any statutory impediment that's out there right now, i.e. is there a problem that needs to be fixed there, or is that just a smokescreen to try and say that he has some type of healthcare policy, he has some type of idea? And if so, why hasn't he addressed it? Why is this something that he's waiting on and not introducing something in Congress?
That's a good, I mean, they talk about this a lot, but I think it's a concept which has some negatives to it as well. In fact, if that program were implemented in my own state, it would override certain state laws, et cetera, et cetera. The bottom line in terms of health care, Matt, is that this president has zero of importance to say about the escalating, the rapidly escalating, skyrocketing cost of health care. He is on the wrong side of the prescription drug issue, strongly supporting the pharmaceutical industry. He does not believe in universal health care. He will continue to make sure that the United States is the only country in the industrialized world without a program that guarantees health care to all people, while at the same time we spend twice as much per person on health care. So in terms of health care, given the enormity of the crisis, 5 million more Americans lost their health insurance under George Bush, 45 million more and more underinsured, costs are skyrocketing. He has zero of significance to say. Nothing. Yeah.
And at the same time, thanks, Matt, for the call. At the same time that the costs are skyrocketing, so are the profits of the pharmaceutical industry and the hospital industry, Bill Frist's business. And they're just absolutely exploding.
A major crisis, and we have a president who has nothing significant to say, and what he does say is on the wrong side of the issue.
Yeah, amen. 20 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, Brunch with Bernie, our regular Friday afternoon session with Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman. You can call in 1-866-889-8894. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Due to the rising rate of overweight Americans, more hospitals are being forced to spend money on patient lift systems and specialized hospital beds and wheelchairs. The U.S. Center of Disease Control reports that 65% of American adults are overweight and 31% are obese. Sizewise Rentals, whom specializes in medical equipment for the obese, has reported its business growing 15 to 20% each year.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey there, Georgie girl, who do you think you are to criticize? We just cannot find those guys that you say served with you in 72. Hey there.
we just can't find those guys you say served with. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. The program where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not from some right-wing think tank. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, as always, on Friday afternoon. One of my favorite shows of the week. Bernie, let's go to the phone lines. We've got a few calls here. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Yes, happy Friday to my favorite talk show host and favorite congressman.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. I think it was a good day for Mr. Kerry last night when even people like Bill Kristol and Joe Scarborough say that Bush looked pretty bad. But there was a couple, I think, salient points to the debate is when Mr. Kerry mentioned Halliburton, and Bush did not even respond to that. And, of course, the real killer line was when he quoted from his dad, George Bush Sr., in his book about not wanting to go into Baghdad and occupy it because of all the problems. But there's one thing that I wanted to ask you and Bernie about, Tom, which was not addressed in the debate, and that was this latest report that came, I guess, from the CIA talking about how the situation over there in Iraq is really a lot worse than we're being led to believe. And Bush said that was just a guess. Now, doesn't this show that when the intelligence comports with what he already wants to believe, he'll go along with it, i.e. the invasion of Iraq because of weapons of mass destruction? And, of course, all the apologists for Bush say, well, he was looking at the intelligence, but yet when he doesn't agree with it, it's just a guess.
Good one.
Well, I think that's exactly correct. And as you know, I mean, getting back to the intelligence that he received for Iraq, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that what he took was very, very selective, that there were many people in the intelligence agency saying, wait a second, we're not sure about weapons of mass destruction, we're not sure that this is a good idea. But when you have an administration in being very clear about the information they want, well, you're going to find bureaucrats who are going to come up with that information. But your point is well taken. Suddenly now, when the intelligence people are saying, wait a minute, we have a deteriorating situation, why now it's just a guess.
Yeah.
But when he wants to use the intelligence agencies to make his point, well, this is the best intelligence organization in the whole world, and we've got to rely on that.
Well, and not only that, this so-called guess was given to him in July, and we're just now learning about it. And the intelligence agency that he was using back for the run-up to the war was one that he created. I mean, you know, Doug Feith's Office of Special Plans inside
well,
the
Pentagon.
Well,
you know, Tom, there's a book out there, and I can't remember the name of it. You may know it. Written by a fellow who used the name Anonymous.
Yeah.
Who is in the CIA.
Yeah, Imperial Hubris.
Right. And this was a book very, very critical of our policy in the Middle East and in Iraq, done by somebody in the CIA. And you know what? I think that book would not have gotten out onto bookstands around this country if people fairly high up in the CIA did not agree with some of what this guy was saying.
Yeah, good point. Rick, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Eric in Murfreesboro, Illinois, on the line. Hey, Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I think you're being a little overly optimistic when you think that, you know, that Kerry really won the debate. I agree that he did, but I don't think a lot of people are going to see that because in some respects, Kerry still looked a little weak on, you know, against on defense against terrorism, which the administration has aptly used to scare people. And I don't think that, you know, he really overcame a lot of people's fears, you know, what people are fearing about the terrorism. I also thought it was a little telling when George Bush called the terrorists some folks.
Yeah, yeah. Some folks. We'll get Bernie's response to that right after the break. Eric, thanks for the call and thanks for your comments. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
We'll be right back. It's 29 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartmann radio program. The pill that will help you escape the matrix.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The first presidential debate received unexpected attention as hundreds of people formed a symbolic unemployment line outside the University of Miami Convocation Center where the debate was being held. Waving pink slips of paper in a single-filed line, both unemployed and employed workers were seeking to send a message to the presidential candidates. Denny Frand, Executive Director of People for the American Way in New York.
This is not the number one issue that's being discussed. It's a lot about, it's more about Iraq and it's more about terrorism. But this is an issue, this is one of three that Americans really care about and where they will think about when they go to the polls. So it's a reminder.
The AFL-CIO has also helped organize the 18-minute event which sought to highlight the jobs crisis in the U.S. Frand says that national attention needs to be drawn to the more than 8 million people without employment.
They will get a very simple message that will not be addressed in probably any debate. The president had stated after 9/11 that he was going to create over 5 million new jobs, and they've lost a million.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger terminated three bills on Wednesday that would have stemmed the flow of state jobs to India. One of the bills would have prevented any state work from moving overseas, another would have prevented any work relating to Homeland Security from moving overseas, and a third would give consumers control over where their medical records were stored. Schwarzenegger said the bills would not make the homeland any safer, state and federal laws already protect medical privacy, and that the bills would be detrimental to job creation in the state. Democrats accused the governor, who accepted $3.7 million in campaign contributions from companies that have moved work overseas, of bowing to corporate interests. Two other bills are currently on his desk. One would require private employers to submit data to the state on work moved offshore, and the other would force call centers to disclose their location to any California caller who asks.
After last night's debates, presidential candidate John Kerry spent the night in a hotel 20 minutes away from the University of Miami. The reason, according to the Miami Herald, was to mobilize organized labor by staying in a union-owned hotel. Kerry settled on the Sheraton Bal Harbor, even though many hotels surround the university area. The Bal Harbor was the closest that employs a majority staff of union labor. The campaign booked more than 300 of the resort's 645 rooms. President George W. Bush and his staff, meanwhile, chose the non-unionized Four Seasons Hotel.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A repeal of the federal estate tax could leave charities mourning. According to a new report from the Congressional Budget Office, if a repeal does occur, overall charitable giving could decline as much as 12% and charitable bequests as much as 30%. According to Lee Ferris, a member of Responsible Wealth, an organization that monitors economic equality, a repeal could cost the U.S. Treasury $1 trillion over the next two decades. The estate tax is currently slated to be eliminated for 1 year in 2010.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
And Welcome back. Speaking of helping democracy, Bernie, in the next hour, I'm going to be debating a rich guy who's leading a campaign to do away with the estate tax. I know that there are efforts to do that in Congress. Before we go to the next calls, I'm just wondering if you have any quick thoughts or good suggestions.
Absolutely.
For debating points for me on that.
Sure. I mean, again, the Republicans, who do such a terrible job in terms of public policy, do a fantastic job about distorting reality. So they use the term death tax so that the average American says, oh, gee, this is awful. When I die, my family is going to have to pay taxes on the $30,000 I want to leave my kids. So point number one to be made, Tom, is the estate tax as exists today only applies to the wealthiest 2%. 98% of people pay zero. People will say, well, it's going to be there to protect family farmers. No, it's not. And it's not there to protect small business. It is there to protect the wealthiest people in this country. In terms of really who gets the benefit, half of the benefit goes to the richest 0.1% of the population. So this is a huge tax break for the wealthiest people in this country. And those are the people who have been pushing it. Point number two. If you give tens and tens of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest people in this country, what happens? Well, what's going to happen is your deficit goes up, your national debt goes up. That means that our kids and our grandchildren are going to be picking up the burden. So if this guy thinks that we give tax breaks to billionaires so that middle-class people and their children and grandchildren have to pay the burden, he is wrong. And furthermore, you don't give tax breaks to billionaires and then cut back on veterans' needs, education, affordable housing. So I don't think you should have too much of a problem on this issue.
Yeah, I think I'm well prepared. In fact, my line is going to be goodbye death tax, hello birth tax. I mean, he wants to increase the tax on our children and grandchildren. Anyhow, we'll get into that. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call in, and let's go back to the phones here. Israel in New York. Whoop, wrong button. Israel in New York City is on the line.
Hi, Tom. I did call for some time, but now. Senator Bernie, I got the question. Why the DNC is not more involved in the heartland? I mean, more at the rural area. It looks like they left it alone and let the Republicans take over. That's one thing. The second thing, after the Supreme Court actually selected this president by not counting Florida, why they didn't protest? Why there was no protest sitting in front of the Supreme Court? It looks like they're letting the Republicans do whatever they want to do.
Well, all right. Israel asked two good questions. I think the first one, Israel, what's going on in rural America. I come from a rural state, obviously. Vermont is one of the most rural states in the country. And in Vermont, I think we are doing a lot better in our rural communities than many other places around America. And what I think is going on is in rural America, what the Republican Party has managed to do is shift the issue, shift the debate away from the collapse of the middle class, the outsourcing of good-paying jobs, the disintegration of our health care system, the fact that we pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs, the fact that the new jobs that are being created are paying much less than the jobs we're losing. Those are issues that are not being discussed in rural America. And what they have managed to do is shift the debate to a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. Then they do things like they're sending out, and this is something, Tom, in Israel, really amazing. The Republican National Committee is sending out literature in the South, Arkansas and elsewhere. And you know what? It's elsewhere. And you know what it says? It says, if the liberals gain power, they're going to ban the Bible.
Yeah.
You got that? Ban the Bible. And then, you know, other people around the country, oh, they're going to take away your hunting rifle. I saw a guy recently, wonderful guy. He's going to be supportive of me. He's heard that they're going to take away hunting rifles. So there are a lot of lies that are going on out there. And with the help of the corporate media and a lot of, you know, right-wing talk show hosts, what they have managed to do is deflect attention away from the most important issue, and that is, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And the answer for the vast majority of people, except the very wealthiest people in this country, is no, we are not better off. In terms of your point about protesting, you're absolutely right. It was astounding to me, and I'm an independent, I'm not a Democrat, but I certainly supported Gore, and I'm supporting Kerry today. It was astounding to me in the midst of all of that stuff. And Tom, you'll remember this. You had a few hundred or fewer Republican aides from Washington and a few congressmen batting down the doors.
Yeah, most of them from Tom DeLay's. Yeah, most of them from Tom DeLay's staff, as a matter of fact.
And some other congressional staff. Yeah. Where were the tens of thousands of people saying, "Wait a second, we are going to let that vote take place"? And it was amazing. And that, in many ways, I must say, speaks to the weakness of the Democratic Party. The fact that it really doesn't effectively reach out to the grassroots of America. But that's the subject for another very long discussion.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Israel raises some good points.
Yeah, and on the other hand, it speaks to the almost organized crime mentality of James Baker and that faction of the Republican Party of, I mean, you know, bringing down people from Washington, D.C., from Tom DeLay's office, pretending as if they are local Floridians who are righteously indignant, trying to intimidate local election workers. I mean, this is mob stuff, you know.
It is interesting. I think Israel's point is that there is a widespread perception, which I agree with, is that the Republicans are not only better organized, they are tougher than the Democrats. And I think that Kerry has learned something from that. For example, it's my understanding that on Election Day there are going to be about 10,000 lawyers in polling places all over America to make sure that there is no chicanery going on.
Yeah, so this doesn't happen again. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Paul in Alabama on the line. Hey, Paul, where in Alabama are you?
Oh, Tom, just wonderful. Congressman, you hit the nail on the head. I'm right near Huntsville, Alabama.
That's great.
Can you hear me okay?
You
can hear you fine, Paul.
Yep, fine.
Okay, I'm an airline pilot and a part-time truck driver. And the congressman has hit the nail right on the head. But I think we need to go a little bit farther and say this smarts almost of Nazism, what the Republican right are trying to do to our country. What I wanted to hit on, I think Tom and the congressman will agree with me, is as a part-time truck driver, which I love being a truck driver, by the way, we can run these trucks right now on ethanol, on corn. We don't need fossil fuels. We can run them cleaner. We can run them farther. We can run them better. But they're still shoving fossil fuels right at us.
Right.
And on this business of flip-flopping, I've been a professional pilot for 34 years. I'm a former combat pilot, too. And let me tell you, if I'm making an approach to Atlanta's Hartsfield Airport, and I'm giving an approach to one of the runways over there in marginal weather, and the controller says everything's fine, and I drop the gear, drop the flaps, start my descent, everything on the instruments say it's fine. But I'm getting a jarring as I'm approaching that runway, and I'm starting to feel wind shear. Do I stay hard-nosed and say, no, I'm the captain, I will not change my mind, we're going to land this airplane? Absolutely not. I get paid to look out for my passengers. And if my experience tells me this isn't safe, I don't care what those instruments say, we're going to call for a missed approach immediately because the lives of my passengers come first. And there's no difference between being the captain of an airliner and the president of the United States.
Yeah, and in
the war. Oh, boy, that is very, very well said. You're right. And the only difference is that there are a hell of a lot more lives when you're the president.
Can I say one thing, too, as the congressman pointed out? I used to be a Republican. I wouldn't vote for them again for all the money in the world. You couldn't pay me enough to vote for them. It's like Lincoln said, you can't fool us all the time. Tom, I'm really afraid, and Congressman, I'm very afraid, that Bush and his cronies are going to try to steal this election with these paperless voting machines. This is violating the Constitution. And I'll tell Bush and I'll tell Rove the same thing. And you're talking to about a guy that's got a lot of combat experience. If you win this election fair and square, you are our president, and you will be respected for it, and I'll back you. But you steal this election, you violate this Constitution, I'm going to war with you. You're not wrecking our country. That's what I got to say, and that's exactly how I feel.
Tough language, Paul. Paul, well,
thank you.
You're not stealing our votes.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
I mean, Paul raises a lot of issues, you know, and it really says something about what's going on in our country, where every place I go, it's not just Paul, people are worried. I mean, it's one thing to say, okay, we don't want Bush to win, but it's another thing, and you're hearing more and more people saying, I'm worried about the touchscreen balloting, I'm worried about the companies who manufacture these machines, and certainly what happened in Florida last year leaves a terrible, terrible taste in everybody's mouth.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, what we are trying to do in Congress, by the way, is to make sure that every touchscreen in America kicks out a paper ballot. And I think state by state, people are just going to have to be as vigilant as they can to make sure that there is an honest vote. Because Paul is absolutely right. It's one thing to be disappointed when you lose an election. It's another thing to go through what we went through in Florida and see a whole lot of bad stuff taking place.
Yeah, our lead story, Bernie, just as an FYI yesterday that I opened the show with, was Bev Harris of BlackBoxVoting.com had gotten a Diebold machine, opened up the secret. There's actually a way to hack the machine that was built into the software. Opened that thing up, sat a chimp down in front of it. The chimp pushed the right button. Took her 10 minutes to teach the chimp which button to push. Pushed the right button and reversed the result of the election. A chimp could reprogram the Diebold machine.
What's really scary, for the first time with Diebold and the other manufacturers of these machines, is that the proprietary information on how these things function is being held in private hands.
That's right. Yeah, the heartbeat of democracy has been outsourced, and that's just absolutely wrong. We got a bunch of calls here. Let's get back to them. Ed in San Juan, California on the line. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate what you're saying. But the thing is we really want Bush to win.
We do.
Now, apparently, today, all the conservative radio hosts are just having a fit. And the Democrats are just absolutely embarrassed to get out there and fight. I can tell you, I got two predictions what happens if Kerry wins. First of all, the price of oil will skyrocket. This country will be dumped into an economic trash bin. And then what the Republicans will do is tie up the rest of his 4 years with trying to impeach him.
Mm.
And that's what's going to happen. So
okay.
Bush has to win. Because otherwise, we can't fight them.
No, don't say that. We can't fight them.
When this guy said he wanted to go to war with that, you just said, no, I can't. We can't do that. You're embarrassed. You're intimidated by these people.
All right, but here, that gets back to the point. And it's, again, it's a subject for a very, very long discussion. Is why the Republicans are, in general, more aggressive than Democrats are. Again, I am an independent. That's one of the reasons I'm not a Democrat. And I think it's a catch-22, and here's the catch-22. I think on Election Day, tens of millions of lower-income and working-class people and young people are not going to vote because they do not believe that there is a party out there that really is standing for them and is fighting for them, fighting for their rights. And I think that too often Democrats have looked to big-money interest as well to get their support. And when that whole process takes place, you're not going to have the energy and the fervor behind you to stand up and fight for what's right. What I can tell you is, as you well know, before Clinton was elected and after he left office, they were hounding him day after day after day. Now, you stop and think, with the Republicans controlling the House and the Senate, how many investigations have taken place about anything that Bush has done? And the answer is virtually none. There is almost no oversight in the Congress now because it's a Republican Congress protecting a Republican president.
Absolutely.
Again, what I think we need to do is we need to change the political culture in this country. Ordinary people have got to get much more involved in a dozen different ways. We need strong grassroots organizations. And if Kerry gets elected, we've got to make sure that he does moves in a progressive direction and give him and the good members of Congress the support that they need.
I truthfully hope he does get elected.
Yeah, of course.
Believe me.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, number 12.
How you doing?
Good.
All right. Sorry, I was a little distracted here. I'm going to address the gun issue again because that's my pet issue along with the First Amendment. And I do believe that Senator Kerry is of the disposition to ban hunting rifles because they'll just reclassify them as assault weapons. The updated assault weapons ban proposed to outlaw all semi-automatic shotguns. That means the ones that you go out and shoot ducks with, and it proposed to outlaw all semi-automatic rifles with a detachable magazine, whether that magazine held 3 rounds, 5 rounds, 10 rounds, or whatever, because they reclassified these guns as assault rifles. And 10 years ago, these guns were not assault rifles, and it's incrementalism, and they basically are reclassifying them because they're going to demonize every gun until they get everyone banned. So basically, I'm not going to give them an inch. If the Democrats
number 12, you stay on for a moment? Are you there?
Okay. I'd like to say one more thing, but I'll listen to you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Could you just stay on for 1 second? Okay.
Sure.
Stay there. Let me just respond.
We have 2 minutes, by the way.
Okay. What you're saying is not the 2 points that I want to make. Number one, being in Congress, I strongly disagree with you. That will not happen. There will not be. I represent the state where tens of thousands of people hunt. I will not allow, nor will the overwhelming majority of members of Congress allow to take place what you are describing. Hunting rifles will never, ever be taken away from the American people. Second point, you're getting a lot of your information, in my view, probably, from right-wing groups who want to see George Bush reelected. Many of these groups are working with large corporations who are prepared to take American jobs, send them to China, who are prepared to cut back on health care benefits, on veterans benefits. And what I don't want to see is working people get sucked up into one issue and very often doing that based on wrong information and then voting for folks who are going to take their jobs to China, not give them the veterans benefits that they need, not allow their kids to go to college. All right, number 12, what do you think?
I must say that I do not really support pretty much all of what George Bush does. I do not support Kerry either.
And don't vote for him, and don't get sucked up on this one issue.
There you go. Well said. Number 12, we got a boogie. Thanks for the call, though. Your point is well made. Bernie, excellent answer. It's the Tom Hartman Program. We have to take a short break here. We'll be right back. It's the True People's Radio. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, Congressman Bernie Sanders, 1-866-889-8894.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month of $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now.
800-505-1546.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to...
Scientists say the Arctic is warming faster than any other place on Earth. The locals are noticing the change. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Water cooler conversation always includes the weather, but in Alaska these days, the subject gets more attention than usual.
We've been having a summer which is just extraordinary. It has been so hot and so dry, it's been record-breaking.
That's Charles Woolforth, a lifelong resident of Alaska and author of a new book, The Whale and the Supercomputer. Woolforth says the North's changing weather is obvious all year in his hometown of Anchorage. Earlier springs, hotter summers, and milder winters, including a record setter 2 years ago. But Woolforth says the transition becomes more apparent in the colder parts of the state, and he says Alaska's Native people are most affected.
Going farther north into the Arctic, the changes become much more extreme and pronounced, and the people are much more closely connected with the land, and so they have a very deep perception of what's happening. And their changes include extreme thinning and reduction in sea ice, warming of permafrost so that the frozen ground is less reliable and in some areas is thawed completely.
Woolforth says that thawing even affects the course of rivers and vegetation on the tundra. He says the North's changing climate is disrupting the native Inupiat way of life, which includes subsistence whale hunting on the ice.
The whole complex of very major changes that are all interrelated and interlinked, and it's almost disorienting for people to live in a world where nature is changing so fast.
That's Charles Woolforth, author of The Whale and the Supercomputer. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's becoming more precarious. For failing to toe the line.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us today. Bernie, we've got three calls here in about 3 minutes, so let's take them real quickly. 1-866-889-8894. Scott in Santa Fe is up first. Hey, Scott.
Hey, guys. It's always great to listen to Bernie on Fridays. Wonderful perspective. Very quickly, we just called the Democratic National Committee. I wanted to give out that number, and we were urging them to get Kerry to talk more about his history with BCCI, which is basically, you know, the proto-terrorist financing institution.
Right, he exposed
the
whole thing.
Years. Their number, and they were like, great, we kind of forgot about BCCI, and they're very open to comments from your listeners. They're at 202-863-8000.
Okay.
And just ask for the Kerry campaign. You will be connected to a live person.
Great. Scott, I got to move along. Thanks for the comment. Let's go to Gary in Indiana.
How you doing, Tom?
Hey, great, Gary. You're live.
Hello, how you doing, Bernie?
Good.
I just want to make it real short. Now, last night I think Kerry took him to the woodshed, but other than that, what bothers me is the fact that I voted for George Bush, and I definitely won't be voting that way this time, but when he was asked that question about invading other countries, and, you know, well, to make it short on the diplomacy part and how he could use that for another war.
Yeah.
And
so you think,
what do you think about that?
What I think is, I think the evidence is overwhelming that he has not done a good job in diplomacy and working with our allies and working with the United Nations and working with people throughout the developing world. I think the record is very clear about that.
Yeah. Let's go to John in Pennsylvania. John, we just have a few seconds left. Quick one.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm just calling in response to that taxi cab driver. There was a very good poll which was done on the Majority Report with Janine Garofalo last night,
mm-hmm.
showing that the overwhelming majority of Bush supporters are not informed about the issues, and they actually scored very, very low on a political knowledge test, whereas Kerry's supporters scored very, very high. And I think that's just a very revealing poll, and it really resonated with what that guy said about the taxis turning people into one-issue voters.
The issue here is I think the Bush people have done a huge and successful job in deflecting attention. People are going to be voting inappropriately and inaccurately for guns when the real issue is whether the middle class in America is going to survive.
Yeah, and then who can afford a gun even?
That's
right. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us. Congressman
okay,
Bernie
Tom.
Sanders, great to have you, as always. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting from high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The first presidential debate received unexpected attention as hundreds of people formed a symbolic unemployment line outside the University of Miami Convocation Center where the debate was being held. Waving pink slips of paper in a single-filed line, both unemployed and employed workers were seeking to send a message to the presidential candidates. Denny Frand, Executive Director of People for the American Way in New York.
This is not the number one issue that's being discussed. It's more about Iraq and it's more about terrorism. But this is an issue. This is one of three that Americans really care about and where they will think about when they go to the polls. So it's a reminder.
The AFL-CIO has also helped organize the 18-minute event, which sought to highlight the jobs crisis in the U.S. Frand says that national attention needs to be drawn to the more than 8 million people without employment.
They will get a very simple message that will not be addressed in probably any debate. The president had stated after 9/11 that he was going to create over 5 million new jobs, and they've lost a million.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger terminated three bills on Wednesday that would have stemmed the flow of state jobs to India. One of the bills would have prevented any state work from moving overseas, another would have prevented any work relating to Homeland Security from moving overseas, and a third would give consumers control over where their medical records were stored. Schwarzenegger said the bills would not make the homeland any safer, state and federal laws already protect medical privacy, and that the bills would be detrimental to job creation in the state. Democrats accused the governor, who accepted $3.7 million in campaign contributions from companies that have moved work overseas, of bowing to corporate interests. Two other bills are currently on his desk. One would require private employers to submit data to the state on work moved offshore, and the other would force call centers to disclose their location to any California caller who asks.
After last night's debates, presidential candidate John Kerry spent the night in a hotel 20 minutes away from the University of Miami. The reason, according to the Miami Herald, was to mobilize organized labor by staying in a union-owned hotel. Kerry settled on the Sheraton Bal Harbor, even though many hotels surround the university area. The Bal Harbor was the closest that employs a majority staff of union labor. The campaign booked more than 300 of the resort's 645 rooms. President George W. Bush and his staff, meanwhile, chose the non-unionized Four Seasons Hotel.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A repeal of the federal estate tax could leave charities mourning. According to a new report from the Congressional Budget Office, if a repeal does occur, overall charitable giving could decline as much as 12% and charitable bequests as much as 30%. According to Lee Ferris, a member of Responsible Wealth, an organization that monitors economic equality, a repeal could cost the U.S. Treasury $1 trillion over the next two decades. The estate tax is currently slated to be eliminated for 1 year in 2010.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We were given these ideas that there's weapons of mass destruction, but where are the weapons of mass destruction? They said they were so sure where they were, but where are they? When we were over there, we looked around. I was on an intelligence gathering team. We looked in scientific installations. We never found anything. And it was just a lie. And that wasn't a proper use of American troops. That wasn't a proper use of my life or my friends' lives or the Marines who I've seen die around me. It's not a proper use.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
I bring you tidings of great joy. At last, our Congress critters have done something tangible to lift people up from the economic doldrums. They've raised wages in America. You're not silly enough to think for a moment that Congress would raise your wages, are you? No, no, Nanette. For the past several years, they've kept the minimum wage in our country stuck at the paltry poverty level of $5.15 an hour. It's their wages that they've just raised. Again. By again, I refer to the fact that this is the sixth pay hike that our lawmakers have bestowed upon themselves in the past 6 years. This time, the members will pocket an extra $4,000 each, raising their gross pay to about $162,000 a year. Of course, congressional leaders don't do such dirty work directly. Instead, these steady increases, now totaling some $25,000 over the 6 years, have come surreptitiously. Each year, an automatic congressional increase is tucked deep inside the mammoth appropriation bill for the Treasury Department, a bill that always passes. So members always get a raise, unless they choose to deny themselves by specifically voting to remove the automatic hike. Thus far, they've shown remarkable restraint in this regard. One bold member who keeps trying to say no to this help-yourself dip into the taxpayer's gravy is Jim Matheson, Democrat of Utah. Again this year, Matheson called for a vote on the $4,000 increase. But by a tally of 235 to 170, his colleagues rejected his procedural motion, thus avoiding even having to cast a direct public vote on their money grab. This is Jim Hightower saying, at a time when the wages of average Americans have fallen in terms of buying power, it's good to know whose side your Congress critter is on. To learn how your member of Congress voted on Matheson's attempt at honesty, call Taxpayers for Common Sense, 1-800-TAXPAYER.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens, Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add them to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with a meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got Geico. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. Online at geico.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Thomas Paine. In Common Sense, one of his early bestsellers, 1776, 150,000 copies in print, which was a huge bestseller. Hereditary secession is in its nature an absurdity because it is impossible to make wisdom hereditary. History informs us that the son of Solomon was a fool. In The Rights of Man, he argues for the adoption of an inheritance tax in England to balance out the unfair distribution of what he called landed property. He said the accumulation of wealth in specific families was anti-democratic. He said the earth is an inheritance to all God's children, quote, end quote. Dick Patton disagrees. Dick Patton is the executive director of the American Family Business Institute and is working to repeal what he calls the death tax. Dick, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
Hey, Dick, how come if I transfer money to somebody because they do some work for me, they're appropriately taxed on that? I think we both agree that, you know, an income tax, a tax on transfer of wealth. If I make money on the stock market, if I, what some would call unearned income, I'm taxed on that. If I give my kids something, anything over $10,000, there's a tax on that. In fact, as straight income, why is it that you don't think that there should be a tax on the transfer of wealth of an estate, which obviously is going to include capital gains and all sorts of other things that haven't been taxed at that point? I mean, why?
Well, there are a number of reasons. Why don't we start out with simply basic property rights? I mean, you were quoting Thomas Paine. Why don't we go back a little bit further and quote John Locke? You know, as this was at a time when simply the basic concept of property rights was emerging, a concept which, of course, became the American free enterprise system. At that time, John Locke said that if a man has the right to work hard and save and invest and accumulate, then he also has the right to bequest whatever he has earned and gathered to whomever he wants. And the inheritance tax simply... the inheritance tax taxes half of everything that man has spent his life, or woman, have spent their life accumulating and gathering.
Well, the effective rate is 19% last year.
The effective rate of what?
Of the inheritance tax right now. And secondly, you've got this, you know, roughly $3 million exemption for a family, right, for a married couple. For example, you don't want there to be a tax paid on your fortune when you pass. You had a business, employed 19,242 people,
yes.
Sold your business in 2002.
That is correct.
I'm assuming you're sitting on a pile of money there, Dick.
Well, we have some accumulation, but I've got to tell you that, first of all, I invested my life in growing two businesses that provided, actually over 21,000 jobs between the two businesses. And
you've been well
compensated for that. Every step of the way, we paid all of the taxes. And, we're not just talking about the income taxes. We're talking the employment taxes, the multiple tiers of taxes that we pay. And after we go through that gauntlet and we manage to save as opposed to spend everything that we've gathered, then when we die, the federal government, this year, once you pass the threshold, taxes 48% of all of your net worth.
Right, over $3 million.
Over $3 million. If you're married, if it goes through the proper channels, yes.
Right.
The
and that's if you take advantage of no loopholes.
One of the
problems
that we've got in America right now is that this tax affects the family business owners and the farmers, the successful farmers, more than it affects anybody else.
And oh, really? Why was it that Congress last year was unable to find one single family farm that was lost as a result of the inheritance tax?
Well, I'd like you to show me why Congress couldn't. Congress didn't look. Are you quoting the article that came out in the New York Times that claimed that not one family farm was lost?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I can
that was quoting the Congressional
Budget
Office.
You, and we've actually emailed to the author of that article, numerous examples of family farmers who, were severely hit by the death tax. I can tell you this. In fact, we've just finished a calling process in South Dakota that our spokesman in South Dakota is South Dakota's most famous auctioneer. His name is Vernell Johnson, and he has spent his life selling off other people's property. And one of the things that just broke his heart consistently is families having to sell off their farmland to produce death tax cash, or family business owners having to sell off their businesses or simply shut down and part out so that they can come up with death tax cash.
Because their net worth was so much higher than $3 million that they were just, this is heartbreaking.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And furthermore,
Warren Buffett
is heartbreaking too, is the people who work for those businesses. You know, when a business happens to be family owned as opposed to publicly owned, then every generation they're put in a position of having to part with, you know, right now it's up to 48% of their, you know, net assets, and they've got 9 months from the time of death to produce all of that cash. And unfortunately, you know, that puts, you know, whether they are medium-sized family businesses or large family businesses, it puts them in an untenable position because they're not sitting on a pile of cash. You know, the continuous form of any family business or farm is that they are asset rich, but they are cash poor because their assets are invested in machines and jobs and buildings and places where people work. And for the federal government to then step in and say, oh, Grandpa died, you've got 9 months to produce, you know, here's 48% of your net worth.
Dick, I think
businesses are not surviving this.
Yeah, I understand your point. And you know, Warren Buffett, for example, made the point the DuPonts might believe themselves perceptive in observing the debilitating effects of food stamps for the poor, but the current generation of DuPonts themselves are living off the boundless supply of privately funded food stamps. The idea that you get a lifetime of food stamps based on coming out of the right womb strikes at my idea of fairness. On the one hand, I agree with you that there, you know, I would like to leave something for my kids. I'm sure you would. On the other hand, the point that Payne made, the point that Teddy Roosevelt made, the point that has been made so many times in this country, is that we don't have a landed gentry in the United States. In fact, we rebelled against that, the idea of aristocracy.
Absolutely.
And there is a certain point, and we certainly saw ourselves approaching it in the Gilded Age with the Rockefellers and the DuPonts and the Morgans. And this, in fact, is one of the things that really kicked the inheritance tax into high gear, the enthusiasm for it. Teddy Roosevelt, in particular, the Republican Roosevelt's enthusiasm for it, was the fact that family fortunes were becoming so large that these families and their fortunes were so powerful by virtue of their wealth that they could wield power greater than local government, certainly, and in some cases even federal government. It became a threat to democracy, to quote Thomas Jefferson.
This right now, because
let me just finish this point. So if you agree with me on that point, that there is a point at which individual wealth can actually become dangerous to democracy, then why not simply be arguing for raising the threshold of the inheritance tax rather than doing away with it?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm not going to agree with your point. I don't believe that it is government's job to draw a line for anybody and say, when you grow beyond this line, it is our job to redistribute that which you've gathered.
You disagree with the cancer metaphor. That's called property rights.
But you were talking, Tom, you were talking about, you know, the landed gentry, the big money. And, of course, today we have some extremely, extremely wealthy families. Now, let me also tell you that these families are not paying the death tax. You know, they hide their family fortunes for generations upon generations and pay not only not death tax, but no tax whatsoever by protecting it within foundations. And they've got armies of lawyers that, you know, discover for them all the ways to get around, you know, this debilitating tax. The people who slammed with the death tax are generally the successful family businesses and the successful family farms.
Do you think that's wrong?
They've got their nose so close to the grindstone, and they don't have armies of lawyers who are seeking to help them hide behind the tax law.
Right. So let's just raise. You know, let's do. You know, like Jack Kennedy, when he lowered the top marginal rate tax rate from 90% to 70%, he actually was proposing, and he was quite upfront about this. He said in the Nixon-Kennedy debates, he was proposing an increase in taxes, and he did. He actually increased tax revenue, and it wasn't the result, as the supply-siders say, of increased economic activity. It was an actual increase in taxes by closing loopholes. He said, we'll reduce... He said, nobody's paying the 90% rate, so we'll drop it down to 70%, but we'll close loopholes and we'll actually increase revenue. Why not just clean this thing up? If what you're saying is that the really rich, the people who are dynastically rich in that for whom these tax laws were written, or against whom these tax laws were written, are getting away with it, and and the moderate, why not raise the limit from $3 million up to $30 million or $50 million or $300 million? What's wrong with that?
Well, you know, first of all, that doesn't really solve the problem, because those very, very large accumulations of wealth are still going to be hidden behind, you know, the tax laws and foundations and tax-free foundations and so forth. The really probably the fairest way to approach this is the approach that is currently in Senate Bill 13, which, you know, the chief sponsor of which is John Kyle. What that does is it gets rid of the death tax, but it also gets rid of the stepped-up basis for capital gains. Now, what that would mean for, you know, let's say, for example...
So, in other words, if I get my income by not working, I get it because I inherited it from my parents, or if I get it because I sit around the pool all day waiting for the dividend checks to arrive, I pay no taxes, but my plumber has to pay full taxes.
In what context? I'm sorry, you kind of lost me there.
Well, I thought that's what you were just suggesting.
Okay, no, what I was suggesting is first of all, you know, the big money already has, you know, is veils behind which it can hide its tax, you know, its income.
So let's fix that.
Not only from the death tax, but from all taxes. But under S-13, and follow me on this, you know, the way it is right now, you pay the death tax, but the heirs start all over with capital gains. What that means, essentially, is while they pay a higher tax, death tax, 48%, they don't pay capital gains on the accumulations of wealth. What S-13 provides is that we get rid of the death tax, but we also get rid of the stepped-up basis, which would mean that those increases in accumulations of wealth, you know, the heirs will pay capital gains taxes on that.
Oh, I see. So you're increasing the capital gains. So you're taking the capital gains tax back up to the income tax rate.
No. If capital gains would be at what capital gains is,
15%.
But it would be paid because, you know, when somebody dies, you pay the death tax, and you start at scratch on capital gains,
okay.
Which means
Dick, we got to wrap it up here. I'm sorry, we've got to wrap it up. But do you have a website you want to plug?
Absolutely.
10 seconds.
www.nodeathtax.org.
Okay, great. Dick Patton, thank you very much, Dick.
You bet. Thanks, Tom.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a dust mask. I would never put the Orrick name on a bagless vacuum. They're filthy. My hypoallergenic Orrick XL uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. They hold four times more than the leading brand of bagless vacuums. What goes in the Orrick bag stays in the bag, including bacteria and viruses. Empty a bagless vacuum, and the dust goes right back into the room you've just cleaned. Is this sanitary? Orrick cleans the air as it vacuums the floor. Try my 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. It's the clean alternative to bagless vacuum.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Visit IowaPeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit IowaPeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
4 more years of sweet compassion, conservatism feels so right. I know why, be well cared for so long as I am rich and white.
4 more years. Welcome back, 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. George W. Bush last night.
You know, I think about Missy Johnson's fantastic young lady I met in Charlotte, North Carolina. She and her son Brian. They came to see me. Her husband, PJ, got killed. He'd been in Afghanistan, went to Iraq.
Just went to Iraq, yeah, that's all, and just got killed. But he had to.
You know, it's hard work to try to love her as best as I can, knowing full well that the decision...
It's hard work trying to love her as best as I can. There were so many times... Watching that debate... That I was embarrassed for my country. It is difficult to watch George Bush and know that the rest of the world is watching. Every family has the kind of the crazy aunt in the closet or cupboard or whatever the old expression is. But ours is our president. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I got some more information here on the wealth gap, which I wanted to get into. First, let's take a call here. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, has been patiently waiting. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. I called in to kind of chat with your previous guest. Number one, I want to compliment you on being courteous enough to not completely, totally interrupt him every time that he reframed the estate tax to the death tax.
Yeah.
What a wonderful Lutz. Change.
Well, see, one of the reasons that I don't crawl all over these people, like Corsi yesterday, is because I assume that my listeners are intelligent enough
right.
to know. I can make the point, they get it, and then these guys, they do their talking points over and over and over and again, and it's like, why, we don't.
And it so happened from a time standpoint. Last night we had a little get together at the community center, and we showed the movie Orwell Rolls in His Grave.
Mm-hmm.
And your Bernie is featured in that movie.
Yeah.
And he made the statement last night, and I could be just a little wrong because I didn't study the statement because I didn't know this guy was going to be on. But if I remember right, Bernie said that 0.5% of the American people will receive 50% of the benefit of eliminating the estate tax, and that 100% of the top 2% will totally benefit. Nobody below the top 2%.
Yeah, that's it. If you're in the bottom 98% of Americans,
you get no benefit.
You don't have to worry about an estate tax. You just don't have to worry about it at all. And
one of the other things that I was thinking about was if somebody is intelligent and motivated and driven enough to build an estate of over $3 million. They ought to be intelligent enough to be able to do effective estate planning, buy a life insurance policy to pay the tax.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
Yeah. Well, problem solved. And, I mean, you know, what's really going on here.
And society benefit.
The real agenda here is the freeloader agenda, Roy. It's, mm-hmm.
It's class warfare, and they're winning.
So far, yeah, you know, these things go around. Here's Andrew Carnegie, or Carnegie, I guess is how it was pronounced. He wrote a little booklet called The Gospel of Wealth. He was the richest man in America when he wrote this. And he says, why should men leave great fortunes to their children? If it's from affection, then it is a misguided affection, because great sums bequeathed often work more for the injury than the good of the recipients. The instances of public servants that live off their wealth in order to devote themselves to community service are rare. It is not the welfare of the children, but family pride which inspires these legacies. And he goes on to say the unintended effect of the tax is to induce the rich man to attend to the administration of wealth during his life, which he thought was a good thing. In fact, he says the man who dies rich dies disgraced. Andrew Carnegie had given away 90% of his wealth before he died.
I wrote a few term papers that I researched in the Carnegie Library.
Yeah.
Have a good one, Tom.
Thank you, Roy. Good to hear from you. Yeah, Andrew Carnegie, an extraordinary man, actually. And one of the robber barons. The top 1% of Americans own 38.1% of all of America. The next 4% own 21% additional. These are the numbers. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The first presidential debate received unexpected attention as hundreds of people formed a symbolic unemployment line outside the University of Miami Convocation Center where the debate was being held. Waving pink slips of paper in a single-filed line, both unemployed and employed workers were seeking to send a message to the presidential candidates. Denny Frand, executive director of People for the American Way in New York.
This is not the number one issue that's being discussed. It's more about Iraq and it's more about terrorism. But this is an issue. This is one of three that Americans really care about and where they will think about when they go to the polls. So it's a reminder.
The AFL-CIO has also helped organize the 18-minute event, which sought to highlight the jobs crisis in the U.S. Franz says that national attention needs to be drawn to the more than 8 million people without employment.
They will get a very simple message that will not be addressed in probably any debate. The president had stated after 9/11 that he was going to create over 5 million new jobs, and they've lost a million.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger terminated three bills on Wednesday that would have stemmed the flow of state jobs to India. One of the bills would have prevented any state work from moving overseas, another would have prevented any work relating to Homeland Security from moving overseas, and a third would give consumers control over where their medical records were stored. Schwarzenegger said the bills would not make the homeland any safer. State and federal laws already protect medical political privacy, and that the bills be detrimental to job creation in the state. Democrats accused the governor, who accepted $3.7 million in campaign contributions from companies that have moved work overseas, of bowing to corporate interests. Two other bills are currently on his desk. One would require private employers to submit data to the state on work moved offshore, and the other would force call centers to disclose their location to any California caller who asks.
After last night's debates, presidential candidate John Kerry spent the night in a hotel 20 minutes away from the University of Miami. The reason, according to the Miami Herald, was to mobilize organized labor by staying in a union-owned hotel. Kerry settled on the Sheraton Bal Harbor, even though many hotels surround the university area. The Bal Harbor was the closest that employs a majority staff of union labor. The campaign booked more than 300 of the resort's 645 rooms. President George W. Bush and his staff, meanwhile, chose the non-unionized Four Seasons Hotel.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A repeal of the federal estate tax could leave charities mourning. According to a new report from the Congressional Budget Office, if a repeal does occur, overall charitable giving could decline as much as 12% and charitable bequests as much as 30%. According to Lee Ferris, a member of Responsible Wealth, an organization that monitors economic equality, a repeal could cost the U.S. Treasury $1 trillion over the next two decades. The estate tax is currently slated to be eliminated for 1 year in 2010.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Adam Sharon is calling in with our report from the Talk Radio News Service here in Washington, D.C. Hey, Adam, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. I'm actually in Miami today. I was at the debate last night with Ellen Ratner.
Great.
She's on a plane right now back to Washington.
Okay, so what's up?
Quite a debate. I mean, everyone is saying that Kerry won, and I have no doubt he did definitely win. The question is, what does the Kerry campaign do now? And both Ellen and I were, even amongst ourselves last night, a little concerned for a very basic reason. All the media watched these events in a huge hall, a media filing center. The Bush-Cheney people, every 10 minutes, came out with a one-page press release. Here's a misstatement by Kerry. Here's a falsehood. Here's the record. Whereas the Kerry and Edwards people were slow, did not respond, and their first page, their first rapid reaction document came out maybe an hour and 15 minutes into the debate, whereas the Bush people already had six or seven documents floating around.
So the Bush people were spinning the debate to the press as it was happening?
It is an incredible operation, Tom. Everyone is the press are there, and out come the Bush-Cheney people, and out come the Kerry people, and they have different flyers, and they're very creative. Different
yeah.
color paper, and they distribute it. They have students from the University of Miami, and it'll happen in Cleveland. It'll happen in Arizona. It'll happen in St. Louis. Give out these documents, and then the media can read them on the air, and that shapes the article that a reporter might write.
Right.
It might shape a radio report a reporter might give.
It's amazing what you can do with a few billion bucks, you know? I mean, a few billionaires behind you, it's amazing. Amazing.
That's what those staffs do. It's an amazing thing. And then after the debate, you might have watched a little bit on television, all the media file into a huge room called the Spin Alley is what they call it.
Yeah.
And again, same idea. Each candidate, each surrogate out giving the party message. And that's what they were doing. An interesting observation, most people, Bush people, were, of course, complimentary toward Bush, but many people called it a draw, which to me means we can't say that he lost. So let's just call it a draw and leave it at that. When de facto, it was probably a Bush loss.
This wasn't a draw. There was blood on the floor. I mean, George Bush, Louise and I visited some friends of ours. We watched over at their house, and on the way home, Louise turned to me and she said, they've got to adjust his medication. it's like, I mean, there is something wrong with that guy. It's, he just, I, he, You know, maybe it's untreated alcohol. I just don't know what it is, but it was like his ADD. He needs to be on Ritalin. Maybe that's it. But he was not tracking. He was not paying attention. He would say, "I want to rebut," and then he'd, you know, these be his long pauses. I mean, it was embarrassing.
There is a great video out right now on the Democratic National Committee's webpage. I believe it's democrats.org, democrats.org.
Yep.
And it's very basic, very simple, a shot of both Bush and Kerry side by side, Kerry motioning to the camera, talking with command, whereas you see Bush darting his eyes, looking down, rubbing his eyes, looking at the audience, and clearly you could tell, and there's music in the background, not any sound, just music. One person was with it, the other person was in a different place altogether.
Yeah. Okay, well, Adam, thank you for the report from Florida there.
You got it. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Talk Radio News Service, Adam Sharon. Thanks, Adam, for calling in. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Tony in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. What's up?
The biggest thing about last night that really made me upset was he constantly talked about Iraqi freedom while we start to live under the Patriot Act.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only that, you know, it's okay for all Iraqis to have nationalized health insurance, but not Americans. It's okay for all Iraqis to have full retirement Social Security, but not Americans. And we're paying for this with our tax dollars. And don't get me started here. And okay, back to you, Tony.
And then when Kerry was talking about different programs and Bush goals and how do you think he's going to fund those programs, and I'm thinking, raise taxes. That's what you got to do. In the mid-50s, when we were taxing the crap out of the rich, we had huge economic growth. And then in the middle of Reaganomics, we only had 2.5% economic growth.
Yeah, no, clearly the golden age of the American middle class ran from the mid to late 1930s up through the early 1970s, and it was when the top marginal tax rate, well, up until 1980, let's say, and it was when the top marginal tax rate was between 70 and 90%. And you drop the taxes, and what happens? You start getting these huge concentrations of wealth at the very top, and the middle class starts to vanish. We're going back to a feudal society, back to an aristocracy, an economic aristocracy, and the economic aristocrats want to hang on to it forever in their families and say, you know, hey, this is mine, you know, we'll grant them, hey, you know, you did some good, you got some money, you know, but you also, well, as Roosevelt said, you know, Teddy Roosevelt made a great point about this. Let me just find it here. Here it is. He says, the man of great wealth owes a particular obligation to the state because he derives special advantages from the mere existence of government. The wealthy individual needs to pay for the protection that the state provides for his or her property, a military force that defends private property from foreign threat, and a legal system and police force that protects private property from domestic theft. And then he quoted Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations. He says, it's only under the shelter of a civil magistrate that the owner of valuable property can sleep a single night in security. And, you know, this in defense of an estate tax, December 4th, 1906, when he proposed this to Congress. That's it, Tony.
I think Bush is starting to look a lot like Cheney growing horns, but...
Yeah.
Other than that, Kerry 2004, and that's
Cheney did, or Kerry did well last night. Tony, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. How the debate is playing in the battleground here from the Arizona Republic, the newspaper. The reports are starting to come in now. The Arizona Republic, quote, this newspaper has been supportive of Bush in much of his prosecution of the Iraq War, but it was clear to us the president was beaten decisively by his challenger in this 90-minute contest. In Florida, the St. Petersburg Times, quote, Bush looked visibly angry at times as Kerry repeatedly questioned his credibility and judgment, end quote. The St. Petersburg Times again. Bush seemed flustered early on. Asked about the pursuit of Osama bin Laden, he made what the Kerry campaign will surely describe as a Freudian slip. Of course we are after Saddam Hussein. I mean, bin Laden. In Iowa, another swing state, the Des Moines Register. Kerry scores, but there's no knockout. Kerry was cogent and focused, something he needed to do to look presidential. He went on the attack early and kept Bush on the defensive through much of the event. Bush sometimes looked peeved and fidgety, and his twitching mouth and blinking eyes indicated a nervousness. Advantage Kerry. In Iowa, the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Undecided voters' reaction to the first of the three debates between President Bush and Senator John Kerry was for the most part positive. And it goes on and on. I have several pages here of these right now. You wouldn't believe the stack of email I got today. It was just incredible. This fellow by the name of Jim, I'm not going to put out last names here. Hello, everyone. Kerry was the clear winner. His demeanor exuded confidence, his style of speaking crisp and to the point, and his substantive comments greatly overshadowed those of the president. President Bush at times seemed almost lackadaisical in his answers and his use of repetitive phrases. In addition, the president's slouching countenance gave a negative sign, and the camera caught the many smirks on his face when Kerry was talking. Not a good performance of the president at all. Here's another one from Jason. Hi, I know you'll get a lot of spin around the debate, but I wanted to tell you what it did for me, an average not-so-political guy. Here's what I got out of it. George Bush, being president is hard. It's hard work. John Kerry, you've made a mess in Iraq. I'll clean it up. Bush, how can you undermine our boys in Iraq by saying this war is wrong? Kerry, I want to honor them and keep them alive by fighting a smarter fight. Bush, but, blinks many times. You keep changing your mind. Now we're back to Jason speaking. You know what? Kerry's not the only one who's changed his mind. I've changed my mind about Bush, too. He's out of his depth. We need a grown-up in the White House now more than ever. Smirks and slogans and slurs are all Bush has got. As he showed me beyond a shadow of any doubt in that debate, Kerry got my vote last night. Here's one from Ken in Cary, North Carolina. He says, tonight is the first in the first presidential debate, John Kerry shows us he has what it takes to be our next president. He projected strength, intelligence, and wisdom. His undeniable command of the issues is refreshing. Mr. Bush, however, seemed highly uncomfortable defending his own record. His simple-minded focus and insistence on painting John Kerry as a flip-flopper throughout the debate was exposed as the sham it is. Only when sound bites are cut and pasted out of context can such a charge hold up. It was amazing to hear John Kerry describe his consistent position on the war in Iraq, only to have Mr. Bush attempt to spin and distort it on the spot. The reviews keep coming in. CNN Gallup poll, Kerry 53, Bush 37. Who won the debate? CBS poll, Kerry 44, Bush 26. ABC poll, who won the debate? Kerry 45, Bush 36. It is pretty clear what happened last night. 1-866-889-8894. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Chuck, what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, it's really impressive, and I'm glad that I got to come on right after you just read that, because it is the spin machine that is firing up. I watched the debate with a few people last night, and it was pretty clear that Kerry was incredibly dominant and very, very good at what he did. I'm actually surprised that George Bush did as well as he did. I was expecting it to be an even more pathetic performance. But by today, and we're not even at noon out here yet, by today, the spin machine is such that people talking to me this morning have basically said, well, you know, I saw some clips, and I started thinking about what Bush said again, and I think Bush actually did pretty darn well, and, you know, it's just amazing. They have already, not even 24 hours.
Yeah.
And the spin machine has already got people who are pretty much on the fence but slightly pro-Bush back to thinking Bush did a great job.
Yeah, and for example, him saying that the reason why we have a mess in Iraq is because he was so successful.
No, what I said was that because we achieved such a rapid victory, more of the Saddam loyalists... we're around. In other words, we thought we'd whip more of them going in.
Yeah. Figure that one out.
I mean, I got to tell you, it's
he's incoherent.
It's incoherent, but if you know the way they've cut and pasted and put it on the right-wing spin machine, it's amazing.
Yeah, and then his comments, like, you know, he gets to, you know, you've heard the clip on the show before, you know, I'll decide, not you. Here he is again.
Osama bin Laden doesn't get to decide. The American people decide.
Well, maybe not.
I decided.
That
action was in Iraq.
Yeah, I decided. That's right. Yeah, he's downright presidential, this guy. It's scary.
He's a a downright moron. But there you go.
There you go. Chuck, thanks for the call. Hey, good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you want to vote for Bush, if you insist on calling yourself a Republican today, some of the things you have to believe. Saddam was a good guy when Reagan armed him, a bad guy when Bush's daddy made war on him, a good guy when Cheney did business with him, and a bad guy when Bush needed a we-can't-find-bin-Laden diversion. That's a pretty good one. Another Republican item of belief, a woman can't be trusted with decisions about her own body, but multinational corporations can make decisions about all mankind without regulation. For those of the religious, Jesus loves you and shares your hatred of homosexuals and Hillary Clinton. The best way to, other Republican beliefs, the best way to improve military morale is to praise the troops in speeches while slashing veterans' benefits and combat pay. Or a good way to fight terrorism is to belittle our longtime allies, then demand their cooperation and money. Yeah, a few other emails here I got. This from David. He doesn't say what city's in. Until seeing the debate tonight, I had been a compassionate about Bush's attempts to get right, to get things right. Tonight, I saw a side of him I've never seen before. He's nothing more than a spoiled rich kid who doesn't want to take the rap for smashing up daddy's car. I'm compassionate no longer. Thanks for listening. That from David. Here's one. This from Clay in Atlanta, Georgia. He says, I might have voted for George W. Bush, but John Kerry has demonstrated what real leadership, what statesmanship can be. President Bush has shown us the cost of blind ideology in fact. Kerry placed himself squarely in front of the issues this country faces, while the president hid behind demagoguery, carefully coached, quote, compassion, end quote, and fomented fear. This is the entire history of the two men. I have to say that I cringed each time the president opened his mouth, afraid his next statement would be as transparently simplistic as the last. The single most persuasive statement was in Bush's closing remarks when he said, in effect, "We need to be afraid. I am not afraid, and I don't need him trying to make me afraid. Kerry can lead this country with intelligence, courage, and honor." That from Clayton in Atlanta, Georgia. 1-866-889-8894. Let's take a few phone calls here. Joe in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi. I just thought I'd update you on the pro-Bush spin.
Oh, my. Okay.
According to Drudge Report, the reason that Bush did so poorly last night was that he was tired from having visited all the hurricane victims.
Oh, yes. Yes. And passing out those billions of dollars.
Yes.
I mean, that's got to be heavy, those checks.
Well, those checks were heavy, and he was just so tired he couldn't really concentrate the way he should have.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's all I had.
Okay, thanks, Joe. That's,
sure.
Drudge Report is not, you decide, right? Jim in New Mexico, stick around. Mark in Santa Fe, hang on. We'll take your calls right after the break. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Whoop, hang on there. There we go. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news, helping you win the water cooler wars, discussing solutions and not false promises.
Want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. In New York City, contract negotiations are stalling over affordable health care coverage for members of the Building Services Union. If negotiations fail, more than 70,000 workers could go on strike when the contract expires at midnight on September 30th. Rebecca Miles reports.
Thousands of building service workers from across the tri-state area voted overwhelmingly to authorize Local 32BJ, the bargaining committee, to call a strike if talks with management fail to produce an acceptable contract this week. The turnout was so large that loudspeakers were erected on the sidewalk to allow workers to hear the negotiations. And the sticking point with management is affordable health care. I spoke to Leo Reynolds, a building services worker, who told me why he was at the meeting today.
They want to give us a wage increase, but it's not enough, especially if you have a big family.
Matt Nersig, spokesman for Local 32BJ, explains what has happened since the last contract negotiation.
What we're asking for is management to extend our employer-paid health care coverage.
So far, the union has not seen a contract proposal they think is acceptable. But as Nersig points out, unlike in other organizations where employees are now contributing towards their health care, the salaries of many cleaners and janitors are so modest that to make contributions to their own health care would be impossible. I asked Matt Nersig whether he thought it might come to a strike and what effect that might have on the city.
With 25,000 commercial building workers here in the city, there could be a serious and inconvenient disruption of business and the flow of commerce if management pushed us into a situation where we felt like we would have to take some kind of action to get our message across to them.
With more than 70,000 members, Local 32BJ is the largest building service workers union in the United States. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Start me
up. Start me up. And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. The cleaning up the debris from the debates last night. Let's just take a couple of quick calls. We've got about 3 minutes in this segment, and I got three callers on hold here. Jim in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, thanks for the opportunity to tell you a story. Last evening I was coming home from
Arizona back to New Mexico, and it was a very bad location. I had the debates on three different stations, and Michael Savage had his station on a 15-second delay, and whenever Curry went to make a valid point, he would drown them out, scream and yell, call him a commie and other things. I mean,
you're kidding.
It's an absolute disgrace. But I'd like to point one thing out that none of the major media has picked up on, and that is that there was a young couple killed from the United States in Israel some months back, and following that, Sharon came to visit the White House, and they were being interviewed with Bush by CNN, and one of the reporters asked Mr. Bush to make a comment about the young couple being killed, and Bush said, oh, it's an absolute tragedy, and for what? And he began to stammer, and he came out and said, for what, a false religion? This guy is so clueless.
Yeah, yeah.
He is actually encouraging the enemy.
I know it's tragic. It's tragic. Jim, yeah. I got to move along. Let me get a couple more of these calls. But
thanks
for making your point, Mark in Santa Fe. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Two points that I wanted to make is one, I actually have to change my mind about how stupid I thought he was. It's really just more narrow-minded, messianic, and absolutely determined. What he wants to do, and that's actually a little more scary than just a stupid man. And then the second one I thought was really interesting, being a psychologist, he told us that he knows what the other international people are thinking. And I was hoping that Kerry would say something, oh, so you know what they're thinking. Well, when you go to a table to do negotiations, you ask what people are thinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was the one that I was very, very concerned about when he said that he knows what they're thinking.
That's
it for me, and I thought those were two key points for me.
Thanks, Mark. That one flew by me. I'll have to go back and listen for that. Scott in Santa Rosa, you've got the last word here. We've got about 20 seconds.
Two quick things. One, I thought Kerry did great, but he could have done better by substituting President Bush for they every time he said they.
I agree.
Make it personal.
Yep.
And the last thing, with the Patriot Act renewal, I think he should equate that with the terrorist success, basically saying that, you know, renewing this act is taking away our freedom, just like he keeps using the rhetoric in Iraq that they want to destroy our freedom and take it away, or Iraq's freedom. They should equate that.
Why should we be doing their job for them?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Good point, Scott. Thanks for the call. Thanks
sure.
for your contribution to the program. I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. You're in the middle of the vast radical middle conspiracy.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Give a small child a knife, and the poor tyke is likely to chop off a finger. But in the hands of a master chef, that knife is a tool for creating a sumptuous feast. It's the same thing with money. Give money to poor people, and they'll probably squander it on foolish indulgences like aluminum siding or medicine or food. But if you put money in our hands, in the hands of people who have been around money all our lives, we're going to build empires and buy elections and develop weapon systems and suppress dissent and spread the blessing that is the essence of what America is all about. Unbridled corporate freedom all over the world. I'm Zena Fobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The first presidential debate received unexpected attention as hundreds of people formed a symbolic unemployment line outside the University of Miami Convocation Center where the debate was being held. Waving pink slips of paper in a single-filed line, both unemployed and employed workers were seeking to send a message to the presidential candidates. Denny Frand, executive director of People for the American Way in New York.
This is not the number one issue that's being discussed. It's more about Iraq and it's more about terrorism. But this is an issue. This is one of three that Americans really care about and where they will think about when they go to the polls. So it's a reminder.
The AFL-CIO has also helped organize the 18-minute event, which sought to highlight the jobs crisis in the U.S. Fran says that national attention needs to be drawn to the more than 8 million people without employment.
They will get a very simple message that will not be addressed in probably any debate. The president had stated after 9/11 that he was going to create over 5 million new jobs, and they've lost a million.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger terminated three bills on Wednesday that would have stemmed the flow of state jobs to India. One of the bills would have prevented any state work from moving overseas, another would have prevented any work relating to Homeland Security from moving overseas, and a third would give consumers control over where their medical records were stored. Schwarzenegger said the bills would not make the homeland any safer, state and federal laws already protect medical privacy, and that the bills would be detrimental to job creation in the state. Democrats accused the governor, who accepted $3.7 million in campaign contributions from companies that have moved work overseas, of bowing to corporate interests. Two other bills are currently on his desk. One would require private employers to submit data to the state on work moved offshore, and the other would force call centers to disclose their location to any California caller who asks.
After last night's debates, presidential candidate John Kerry spent the night in a hotel 20 minutes away from the University of Miami. The reason, according to the Miami Herald, was to mobilize organized labor by staying in a union-owned hotel. Kerry settled on the Sheraton Bal Harbor, even though many hotels surround the university area. The Bal Harbor was the closest that employs a majority staff of union labor. The campaign booked more than 300 of the resort's 645 rooms. President George W. Bush and his staff, meanwhile, chose the non-unionized Four Seasons Hotel.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A repeal of the federal estate tax could leave charities mourning. According to a new report from the Congressional Budget Office, if a repeal does occur, overall charitable giving could decline as much as 12% and charitable bequests as much as 30%. According to Lee Ferris, a member of Responsible Wealth, an organization that monitors economic equality, a repeal could cost the U.S. Treasury $1 trillion over the next two decades. The estate tax is currently slated to be eliminated for 1 year in 2010.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We were given these ideas that there's weapons of mass destruction, but where are the weapons of mass destruction? They said they were so sure where they were, but where are they? When we were over there, we looked around. I was on an intelligence gathering team. We looked in scientific installations. We never found anything. And it was just a lie. And that wasn't a proper use of American troops. That wasn't a proper use of my life or my friends' lives or the Marines who I've seen die around me. It's not a proper use.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Get ready for the storm surge. I don't mean the floodwaters from the horrific hurricanes that have been battering our country, but the surge of clothing and textiles flooding into our land from China, drowning what remains of our own industry and wiping out entire American communities. But don't blame the Chinese. Such U.S. retailers as Walmart, Gap, and Nike led the rush to China years ago to build that country's now booming textile industry on the backs of dirt cheap labor, including sweatshops, child labor, and forced labor. It was these same corporations that pushed U.S. politicians to go along with the creation of the sovereignty-busting outfit called the World Trade Organization. The secretive, autocratic WTO, based in Geneva, has established global corporate rule over our jobs, farms, environment, food, and even our laws. If, for example, we pass quotas and other laws to ensure the economic well-being of our textile families and towns, the manufacturers in China can run to the WTO and overrule our laws. This, in essence, is what has happened. And next year, our clothing and textile markets will be thrown wide open to a tsunami of Chinese-produced goods. American families stand to lose 600,000 more manufacturing jobs as a result. Meanwhile, Chinese workers are not benefiting. Wages are reported to be falling even as productivity rises, and Walmart, Gap, Nike, and the rest laugh all the way to the bank. Now, in this political year, the politicians are scrambling, putting out all sorts of hot rhetoric to try to cover the fact that they are the ones who opened the gates with their blind support of the WTO. Feebly, the Bush White House is reduced to pleading with Chinese officials to voluntarily restrict their clothing exports to the U.S. No, say Chinese officials, noting that to do so would be, quote, a breach of the WTO. This is Jim Hightower saying, our own corporate and political leaders sold America out to the WTO.
The Chicago Underground Daily calls it an amazing cinematic wonder, spellbinding.
My daughter, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Father, you must.
must remain strong, for I bring good news.
Oh, you bring good news?
Yes, I just save a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system and beaming around the planet on my favorite web station, one of the finest in all of creation, radiopower.org, with archives at one of the finest liberal, well, I'm not progressive, really... just one of the finest radio archive sites. You want to listen to the radio any time of the day, whiterosesociety.org also. And we have some archives also at tomhartman.com. It's been a while since we've updated them. I am going to be getting to that. And Mike Toth has been working really hard to keep these things up to date, and we appreciate it. Welcome back to our program, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into the chat room, which is lively and quite a discussion about the presidential debate, and pretty much for the last couple of hours, it's been continuously. That's been the main subject of conversation there, and much of it here on the program as well. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call into the program. Justice Scalia, what's this about? And George Bush has said that he would like to appoint more judges like Scalia to the court. Antonin Scalia. And he's speaking at Harvard University yesterday. Scalia says, and I quote, I'm quoting a Supreme Court Associate Justice who may be Chief Justice if Rehnquist steps down. I mean, the big debate is him or Thomas if Bush gets elected, God forbid. And here's Scalia, and I quote, I even take the position that sexual orgies eliminate social tensions and ought to be encouraged, end quote. I have no idea what Scalia really sounds like, but I didn't want those words to sound like me. Sexual orgies eliminate social tensions and ought to be encouraged. Yes. Words of wisdom from our conservative Supreme Court justice, who likes to go duck hunting with good old Dick. Here, Dianne Feinstein, this is sort of the best of the rest of the news here. I just have a few news stories that are worthy of sharing with you. Turns out Ayad Alawi, the guy who was, you know, a hitman for Saddam Hussein and then a spy for the CIA and now is in charge of Iraq, who, according to news reports published all over the world except in the United States, and I mean major newspapers, the Sydney Morning Herald, you know, the largest newspaper in Australia, which broke the story, actually. Their reporter was there. And other newspapers all around the world. This guy, Alawi, shot six prisoners in the head at a police station by way of showing the police how to deal with criminals. Whatever these, you know, whether these guys were terrorists or bombers or whatever, who knows, justice Western style. Anyhow, Alawi comes to the United States. He gives a speech. And it turns out that his speech was written by the Republican, not just the White House, but by Dan Senior, who is if he didn't write the entire speech, at least he has, you know, he's come out and said he coached him on it. Who is part of the Bush campaign. Now, Alawi has to go back to Iraq and face his own people and try to tell them that he's his own man and that he's not a puppet for the United States. Because if he goes back and he's identified as purely and simply another Shah of Iran-type character, another U.S. puppet, it's like, you know, tattooing a bullseye on his forehead. If the elections in January, should they be held, are to have any credibility whatsoever, and he's, you know, one of the candidates running, and by the way, did you notice yesterday Saddam Hussein's lawyer has announced that Saddam is going to run for election? It's apparently 46% of the people, according to the poll he presented, would vote in favor of Saddam for president, while 40% would vote for execution of Saddam. So I'm not kidding you. In any case, here we have Alawi's speech was actually written by, or at least large parts of it written by, and he was coached in giving this speech by the Bush campaign. Dianne Feinstein writes this letter. She says, I want to express my profound dismay about reports that officials from your administration and your re-election campaign, this is a letter to Bush, were heavily involved in writing parts of Prime Minister Iyad Alawi's speech. To learn that this was not an independent view, but one that was massaged by your campaign operatives, jaundices the speech and reduces the credibility of his, Alawi's, remarks. Yeah, no kidding. So, it's a tough one. 1-866-889-8894, by the way, our telephone number. Max Cleland had some thoughts on this. Let's hear Max's take on the debates last night.
They know that he's been to war, and this president hasn't, and you learn from those kind of things, and you learn how to make this country more safe and more secure in a smart way. You get allies in on the ground, you make sure you don't go in alone, and you make sure that you don't take 90% of the casualties and pay 90% of the cost. That's dumb, and that's getting people killed, and that's why people in this country want to change course, and we are going to change course November 2nd.
Yeah, and we are going to change course November 2nd. You know, from your lips to God's ears, Max. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Phil in Burlington, Vermont's on the line. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad that we get a little bit of you over the air with Bernie Sanders, although I guess it's an hour different.
Yeah, it's delayed by an hour on WDEV there in central Vermont. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I think that the Democrats end up looking so weak because they really can't seem to pick the key item in a given situation. For instance, 17 I think, of the 23 9/11 hijackers were Saudi.
15 out of the 19. 15 out of the 19. Yeah, were Saudis.
Oh, okay, 15 out of 19. Yeah, were Saudis. Osama bin Laden is a Saudi. Therefore, we invade Afghanistan and Iraq.
Right.
And why is that?
Well, it's the question that was asked, the comment that was made, I forget by whom, sometime back, that this what George Bush has done would be very similar to Franklin Roosevelt after Pearl Harbor, being attacked at Pearl Harbor by the Japanese, had decided to invade Brazil.
Yeah, but again, all you have to do is say over and over again, 15 out of 19 were Saudi, 15 out of 19 were Saudi. That's what the Republicans are good at, is repeating things like that.
Yeah.
And it's such a weak spot. And with the Bush family connections to Saudi Arabia.
And that's the bigger picture. See, it's not just Saudi Arabia. It is that the United States back in the 50s made a deal with the devil, with the Saudi royal family. And I don't mean to say that the Saudi royal family is the devil, but I metaphorically speaking, you know, Faustian deal. And to get their oil, we've been propping up essentially a dictatorship in Saudi Arabia, this kingdom ever since.
And in Iran. And look what happened there. So we had plenty of warning on this.
Yeah. And Osama bin Laden's his declaration of war against the United States, his explicit demands that were made back in 1998. when he said, if you don't do these things, I'm gonna, we're to get our soldiers out of Saudi Arabia because we were defiling holy ground, and to stop supporting the regime that was pumping oil super cheap out of Saudi Arabia to satisfy our needs. In other words, if we were just to get more efficient cars, if we were to cut back, we don't need this war. We don't have to be in the Middle East. We could have a boom in the United States that would make the dot-com boom look like a picnic. It would make, you know, Henry Ford in the early era of the automobile and the industrialization of America look like nothing if we simply channeled energy, money, and resources into alternative energy. And we'd end up with a better, safer world. But no, that's not going to go for CEO, former oil industry CEO Dick Cheney, or former oil industry CEO George Bush, or Condi Rice, who has a tanker named after her. Ain't going to happen.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And again, the Democrats just are not making the case, and that's why I think that the Democrats are not only going to lose the White House, but I don't think they'll make gains in Congress or the Senate.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see. And, yeah. And you know, I do agree with you that the Democrats have not been willing to play hardball, certainly the way that the Republicans have been playing not just hardball, but they've been lying. They've been distorting
and
lying.
They've been throwing the spitball, mostly.
Yeah. And you know, to the credit of the Democrats, they haven't been lying. But on the other hand, there's enough. You don't have to lie. I mean, there's enough stuff out there. The fact that 9/11 happened on George Bush's watch. Why hasn't anybody been fired? Why hasn't anybody been held accountable? Why, you know, he got a memo in August 6th, saying Bin Laden determined to strike in the United States. What does he do? He goes on the longest vacation in the history of the U.S. presidency. And then he's still afraid to go back to Washington, D.C., because he's been warned. He goes to Florida instead. He's reading My Pet Goat. I mean, and sitting there for 7 minutes with this same dazed and confused look on his face that we saw last night over and over and over again. This man is an embarrassment to the United States. I mean, people thought that Bill Clinton having sex in the White House was bad. Having an incompetent in the White House is worse. A dangerous incompetent who is in bed with the Saudi royal family and who is sucking up to corporate and oil interests in ways that are just surrendering the sovereignty of the United States and trashing our environment.
And who claims to be a born-again Christian and yet, you know, feels that it's best to strike the first blow rather than to turn the other cheek.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that George Bush ever read Matthew 25.
Yeah.
You know, but in any case. Phil, thanks for the call. Good to hear
Thank
from you. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. 18 minutes past the hour. Let's get into a few of these, just a couple of other best of the rest of the news sort of things here that I think are worthy of note. The Republicans using not just 9/11, but using the 9/11 Commission in ways that now the 9/11 Commission is saying, hey, we didn't say that. Don't do that in our name. Stop exploiting us. This from the Associated Press article by Jesse J. Holland. The September 11 Commission on Thursday urged House Republicans to remove immigration restrictions and new law enforcement powers from a bill that carries the Commission's recommendations for reorganizing U.S. intelligence agencies. This is a quote from Thomas Keene, the Republican. We're very respectfully suggesting that provisions which are controversial and are not part of our recommendation to make the American people safer perhaps ought to be part of another bill another time. This is basically a bill to remove more of our civil liberties. You know, the Republicans doing the terrorists' work for them. And House Speaker Denny Hastert says, quote, all of those provisions are directly linked to the commission report. Well, I'm sorry, Denny. The commissioners don't think so. The Republican commissioners don't think so. Some of them would still like to live in a free America. Not Denny Hastert, of course, but at least Tom Keene would like to. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Talk radio for the rest of us.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission.
Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a direct TV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room direct TV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my direct TV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. As the nation focuses on the so-called debates, actually, you know, it was more of a debate than I expected it to be, I have to tell you. I was expecting a dueling press conferences, as everybody has been kind of predicting with the 32-page memorandum of understanding and all this sort of thing, and the candidates cannot address each other. Of course, Bush directly addressed Kerry twice, and, you know, so on. Kerry was just, like, so in control of what happened last night, and Bush was so out of control. It was spooky to think that this guy, George W., has his finger on the nuclear button and was just so out of touch with the very real issues, and so unable to articulate coherent positions. Anyhow, while America is focused on this spectacle, the Bush administration is plowing ahead with their real agenda, with their real work, with the real efforts. This from the Associated Press today, an article by H. Joseph Hebert, H-E-B-E-R-T, pollution enforcement hampered, report says. The Bush administration's push to ease a clean air rule hampered the settlement of pollution lawsuits against utilities, according to a federal agency watchdog's report Thursday. The Environmental Protection Agency said the findings by its inspector general, this being the guy who's doing the Bush administration's biddings. The agency itself is contradicting its own attorney, its own inspector general now, saying, oh, here, I'll read it straight. The Environmental Protection Agency said the findings by its inspector general were inaccurate, misleading, and based on a misunderstanding of the agency's enforcement activities. Senator Jim Jeffords, independent of Vermont, says this report is further evidence that the Bush administration has been trying to gut the enforcement of the Clean Air Act and exempt the biggest, dirtiest power plants from legal requirements. Senator Pat Leahy, a Democrat from Vermont, says this report confirms that the Bush administration is bending environmental law in real ways that make a real difference in the amount of pollution that is pumped into our air and water. Cozy is costly, says Pat Leahy, when you tally the Bush EPA's favors to big polluters and the tolls those favors are taking on the public's health. You want more lung disease, you want more cancer, you want more mercury poisoning, you want more autism, you want more neurological disorders, you want more birth defects from mercury in tuna fish and what, then vote for George. Vote for George, because that's what he is bringing to us. That is absolutely what he is bringing to us, and he will appoint at least two, maybe three, possibly four more Supreme Court justices, and maybe we can get another one like Scalia, who thinks that orgies eliminate social tensions. I just don't get that. I'm sorry. I just don't get that. Call me conservative. I just don't get it. Maybe it's true, but why would a Supreme Court justice say it in a speech at Harvard University? I don't get it. Maybe you can explain it to me. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I want to get back also to some of this avalanche of response from the debates last night that has shown up in my email box and I know is appearing in those of people in the press all across the United States. Really quite remarkable stuff. Cheryl in Atlanta, Georgia writes, Senator Kerry blew away Mr. Bush in tonight's debate. What a difference seeing the men side by side. Kerry showed he had the right stuff as a man well-versed in the issues and challenges we face and able to lead this country to victory in Iraq and a stronger America here at home. The clear choice, writes Cheryl, is between hope and fear. President Bush can do nothing but try to make Americans fearful. Senator Kerry offers us a vision of hope and better days ahead for America. Let's hope Americans choose hope. A little redundant, but hey, it's just, you know, it's somebody writing a letter. Amen, Cheryl. 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. An Orrick professional air purifier renews the air in a typical bedroom every 10 minutes. But how long does it take for a stick-style unit to do that? Well, they don't tell you. In fact, a leading consumer testing magazine says the most popular stick-style unit is ineffective. To clean the air, you must move the air. Try an Oric free for 90 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The first presidential debate received unexpected attention as hundreds of people formed a symbolic unemployment line outside the University of Miami Convocation Center where the debate was being held. Waving pink slips of paper in a single-filed line, both unemployed and employed workers were seeking to send a message to the presidential candidates. Denny Frand, Executive Director of People for the American Way in New York.
This is not the number one issue that's being discussed. It's a lot about, it's more about Iraq and it's more about terrorism. But this is an issue, this is one of three that Americans really care about and where they will think about when they go to the polls. So it's a reminder.
The AFL-CIO has also helped organize the 18-minute event which sought to highlight the jobs crisis in the U.S. Frand says that national attention needs to be drawn to the more than 8 million people without employment.
They will get a very simple message that will not be addressed in probably any debate. The president had stated after 9/11 that he was going to create over 5 million new jobs, and they've lost a million.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger terminated three bills on Wednesday that would have stemmed the flow of state jobs to India. One of the bills would have prevented any state work from moving overseas, another would have prevented any work relating to Homeland Security from moving overseas, and a third would give consumers control over where their medical records were stored. Schwarzenegger said the bills would not make the homeland any safer, state and federal laws already protect medical privacy, and that the bills would be detrimental to job creation in the state. Democrats accused the governor, who accepted $3.7 million in campaign contributions from companies that have moved work overseas, of bowing to corporate interests. Two other bills are currently on his desk. One would require private employers to submit data to the state on work moved offshore, and the other would force call centers to disclose their location to any California caller who asks.
After last night's debates, presidential candidate John Kerry spent the night in a hotel 20 minutes away from the University of Miami. The reason, according to the Miami Herald, was to mobilize organized labor by staying in a union-owned hotel. Kerry settled on the Sheraton Bal Harbor, even though many hotels surround the university area. The Bal Harbor was the closest that employs a majority staff of union labor. The campaign booked more than 300 of the resort's 645 rooms. President George W. Bush and his staff, meanwhile, chose the non-unionized Four Seasons Hotel.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A repeal of the federal estate tax could leave charities mourning. According to a new report from the Congressional Budget Office, if a repeal does occur, overall charitable giving could decline as much as 12% and charitable bequests as much as 30%. According to Lee Ferris, a member of Responsible Wealth, an organization that monitors economic equality, a repeal could cost the U.S. Treasury $1 trillion over the next two decades. The estate tax is currently slated to be eliminated for 1 year in 2010.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. We're just quickly reviewing the debates from last night.
The only thing consistent about my opponent's position is that he's been inconsistent.
Yeah.
He changes positions.
Yeah.
And you cannot change positions in this war on terror if you expect to win. And I expect to win. It's necessary we win.
Yeah, he kept saying it, but he didn't demonstrate it or prove it. And Kerry says...
So the choice for America is you can have a plan that I've laid out in 4 points, each of which I can tell you more about, or you can go to johnkerry.com and see more of it, or you have the president's plan, which is 4 words, more of the same. I think my plan is better, and my plan has a better chance of standing up and fighting for those troops. I will never let those troops down, and will hunt and kill the terrorists wherever they are.
Excuse me, real quick. All right, sir, go ahead. 30 seconds.
Yeah,
and here, Bush, you know.
I understand what it means to be the commander-in-chief, and if I were to ever
say, boss.
This is the wrong war at the wrong time at the wrong place, the troops would wonder, how can I follow this guy?
How dare John Kerry say that? How dare he say, you know, Richard Nixon was saying the same thing. He was saying the exact same thing. 26 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And let's go to Mateo in Espanola, New Mexico. Hey, Mateo, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I wanted to let you know that I went from, yeah, I'll vote for Kerry because I'm, you know, Bush is so outrageous, to I'm putting a Kerry bumper sticker on my car. I'm going to put a sign out. He said some things that, if he enacts them, will totally change the course of our country. For example, he was going to come out against the bunker buster bombs.
Right.
You know, and also he's against Star Wars. I mean, those things are super critical. If we want to change the direction of this world and nuclear proliferation, we've got to deal with the weapons of mass destruction that we're setting in place right here near my home. I can see Los Alamos from where I'm parked right now.
Yeah, that we ourselves are creating. I agree, Mateo. He said a few things last night that I thought were absolutely extraordinary. One of the things that just boggled my mind to hear him just come out and say it, and I'm surprised that it got so little play, you know, that it's not that the news media just didn't jump all over it, was that if he became president, that his goal would not be to have 14 permanent bases in Iraq and to establish a permanent presence, implying that George Bush is trying to create, you know, an imperial state, a client state, and that, of course, the Iraqis don't want this, and it's one of the reasons that they're resisting this. And that's really a topic that needs to be discussed, the fact that the neocons, going back, you know, the Project for New American Century, going back to the 90s, have been saying that we need to basically make Iraq a vassal state, a you know, part of the empire, and Kerry is saying, you know, if you do that, you're just gonna, you know, they're going to resist you forever. I mean, the British tried it with us here in North America; it didn't work. And he's actually talking about trying to put together a strategy to get out of Iraq, whereas Bush has aggressively got Halliburton and Bechtel over there building permanent bases. This is a huge difference.
Yeah, it's massive, and you know, when they talk about funding, you know, proper funding for, you know, the anti-terrorism and stuff, well, if we pull the money out of Star Wars and out of, you know, bunker busting nuclear weapons and apply that money instead to building good relationships with other countries, then we might have a chance of, you know, sustaining our democracy. Otherwise, we're just looking at, you know, a nightmare ahead for us and our children. And yeah, you know, he's got, before I was just going to vote for him because, you know, I can't stand Bush, and he's a war criminal. And now I can vote for him feeling better. I wish he'd stop talking about killing terrorists because, you know, it's not going to get us anywhere. We've got to deal with the root cause of terrorism.
Yeah.
But still,
he has to use that language. He has to use that language, though, to reach out to the security moms and the testosterone-hyped, you know, NASCAR dad group. I mean, you know, there are people that have to hear those words, and you know, war is hell, and you do kill people in war. So, you know, I'll cut him some slack on that. I agree with you. It sounds a little, it's a little more testosterone than I need, but you know, if it gets him elected, I'm all for it. Mateo, thanks for calling.
Well, I sure felt better today.
Yeah, me too. I think the country's, you know, the real possibility, the country headed in the right direction, and hopefully more, you know, more will wake up to that. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mike in Hood River, Oregon. Excuse me, Mike. I was there last weekend.
Great. Yeah, sorry I missed you. Wish I could have seen you in Portland. I just wanted to mention something real quick. As I was getting a day trying to figure out what network to watch the debate on, I turned on C-SPAN and watched the whole thing start to finish. The cameras never panned off the candidates, and it was a great experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be tuning into C-SPAN more often, I think.
Yeah,
there's a lot of talk about the other networks and filtering and a lot of that stuff, but we need to plug C-SPAN because it's showing it, and it's doing a great job.
C-SPAN has all along done a marvelous job. They're an important part of our whole system. I think it's just great. So, yeah, it's a wonderful thing. Mike, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 21 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's just look at some of the points here in the speech. I think worthy of revisiting. Bush again.
Said I misled on Iraq. I don't think he was misleading when he called Iraq a grave threat in the fall of 2002. I don't think he was misleading when he said that it was right to disarm Iraq in the spring of 2003. I don't think he misled you when he said that, you know, anyone who doubted whether the world was better off without Saddam Hussein in power didn't have the judgment to be president. I don't think he was misleading.
Yeah, so that's how you win an argument, George. You agree with your opponent, although you're twisting his words. I mean, you know, doesn't...
I wasn't misleading when I said it was a threat. Nor was I misleading on the day that the president decided to go to war when I said that he had made a mistake in not building strong alliances and that I would have preferred that he did more diplomacy. I've had one position, one consistent position, that Saddam Hussein was a threat, there was a right way to disarm him and a wrong way, and the president chose the wrong way.
Bang. Bingo. There it is. Misstating Iraqi security forces. George Bush last night repeated his claim that we have 100,000 Iraqi security forces trained. It's not true, notes the Center for American Progress, David Sirota's report here today. Last Monday, the Pentagon said, this is a quote from the Pentagon, only about 53,000 of the 100,000 Iraqis on duty have now undergone training. End quote. According to Pentagon documents obtained by Reuters, of the 90,000 in the police force, quote, only 8,169 have received full training. Many police lack equipment or vehicles. Army Lieutenant General David H. Petraeus, the U.S. official in charge of training, has been unable to fill his staff needs. So Bush says we have 100,000 Iraqi security forces trained. The real number, 8,169. He misstated al-Qaeda captures. Last night, George Bush repeated his off-stated claim that three-quarters of known al-Qaeda leadership have been captured. Well, sort of. Three-quarters of the ones that we knew about before 9/11 have been captured. But, he invaded Iraq, which became the poster, the recruiting poster, a worldwide recruiting poster for al-Qaeda. Look at the Crusaders are coming. They're after us. They're coming to get, you know, it's the Crusades all over again. Time to rebuild the empire. I mean, it's a meaningless, three quarters of al-Qaeda has been captured or killed. Nonsense. He's either living in a fantasy world. I mean, seriously, just consider this for a minute. He's either living in a fantasy world, or he thinks we are so stupid that we can't figure out the fact that al-Qaeda has grown from being in two or three countries to 60 countries, even though it's in the newspaper every day, that we didn't notice the bombing in Bali, we didn't notice what's going on in Malaysia, we don't notice what's going on in Indonesia, we don't notice what's happening in the Philippines, we don't know, you know. George Bush was, him and Karl Rove, the cons running this thing, they must think that we are just incredibly stupid. It's the only thing I can, it's the only possible explanation for his making a statement like that, unless he really believes it, in which case we're in even deeper trouble. I frankly would rather have a president of some intellect who thinks I'm stupid than have a stupid president. I am beginning to fear we have both. Or something in between. A president of limited intellect who thinks that all the rest of us are of limited intellect. Misstating the rationale for war in Iraq, Bush tried to rebut Kerry about the pre-war need for more patience in Iraq, saying diplomacy wouldn't have persuaded Saddam to disarm. The Boston Globe writes, it was almost as though the president has forgotten that no stockpiles of forbidden weapons have been found in Iraq. I remember I was sitting there. We were at some friend's house and sitting there on the couch and listening to George Bush say, you know, Saddam wasn't going to disarm if we didn't do something. And I'm going, wait a minute. He'd been disarmed since 91. Your daddy disarmed him. And Bush just keeps rolling right along, you know. And then he didn't get the UN. It was a joke. The document, actually, Saddam gave 12,000 pages of documents to the UN. About 8,000 of them, we went through and, with a black felt marker, marked out all the references to Don Rumsfeld and George Bush and Halliburton and all the companies that were doing business with Saddam. Halliburton doing business with Saddam the year that Dick Cheney was running for vice president. Yeah, seriously. $87 million in business with, I'm sorry, $78 million in business with Iraq. Misstating the rationale for war. Okay, we did that. Misstating voter registration success in Afghanistan. Bush says, and he's been repeating this a lot lately, we had 10 million people registered to vote in Afghanistan. The problem, most sources agree, there aren't even 10 million eligible voters in Afghanistan. Then why are there 10 million people registered to vote? Well, because the warlords have taken control of the process. In his wildest dreams, Mayor Daley couldn't have fantasized what the warlords, the opium producers in Afghanistan that we're supporting right now, who are flooding the world's market with cheap heroin, would do with the appearance of democracy, you know, with a charade for democracy in Afghanistan, led by former UNICAL consultant, pipeline consultant, Hamid Karzai. Human Rights Report, or Human Rights Watch, rather, this week released a report showing that 10 million figure included, quote, multiple registrations of many voters. In a lengthy report, the respected organization also documented how human rights abuses are fueling a pervasive atmosphere of repression and fear in many parts of the country, with voters in those areas having little faith in the secrecy of the balloting and often facing threats and bribes from militia factions. How can you have a democracy when there's only two cities in the entire country where the United States has control? The rest of the whole country is run either by the Taliban or by warlords, narco terrorists. Yes, the Taliban is back in Afghanistan, big time. Women are wearing burqas again. The warlords are running the country. Enormous amounts of opium are being shipped out of there. This is Bush's idea of success. And we have fewer than 20,000 soldiers in there because we had to send everybody to Iraq because Saddam had something to do with 9/11. Iraqis flew into the towers. Tried to kill my daddy. There you go. Saddam tried to kill his daddy. He tried to kill my daddy. Bush inexplicably claimed Kerry's proposals to have direct talks with North Korea would end the six-nation diplomacy that the administration had pursued. You saw that this is how they wrap this thing up. Kerry is saying, you know, George, he didn't say it that way. He was actually talking to Jim Lehrer. He said, we need to have, you know, they use these big fancy words like bilateral, means two countries talking to each other. We need to talk to North Korea. And George says, oh, no, if we do that, China will freak out. And then you won't have these six-nation talks, blah, 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 blah. Completely overlooking the fact that China has publicly asked George Bush to talk to North Korea. It's the official Chinese position. Please talk to North Korea. In fact, every one of the other countries in the area, each one of these six countries, Japan, South Korea, China, all of them, have said, please talk to North Korea. And George has said, No, don't think so. I don't think he wants to take responsibility for the outcome if it doesn't work out. I think that's the bottom line. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartmann's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Billionaires for both.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Some are charging that there's a connection between Halliburton being awarded no-bid contracts in Iraq and the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney used to run the company. Of course there's a connection. Would you rather do business with a bunch of strangers who may charge less or with a dear, dear friend who knows what's in your heart? That's why Dick gets $1 million severance check from us at Halliburton every year. It reminds him who his friends are. Friends shouldn't have to compete for contracts. Friends don't need government oversight, and friends know who their friends are. Cronyism sounds like such a bad word. Try friendship instead. A really lucrative friendship. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
This is the Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A minimum wage referendum placed on the ballot in Florida could change the outcome of the November 2nd presidential election. The measure asks voters to support a $1 increase in the minimum wage from $5.15 to $6.15 an hour this year and annual increases connected to inflation.
$5.15 an hour, which is not even $11,000 a year if you're working full time, is really just a miserly sum, and it's not enough money really to live off of at all.
Elise Scouty Wright, director of South Florida Jobs with Justice, organized a coalition of civil rights groups, religious congregations, and labor unions to collect nearly 1 million signatures over a 10-month period.
Just the sheer volume of signatures that are required to even put this to the voters as a question. It was a huge, huge hurdle. And we also have some political hurdles here. We thought we were going to be up against another amendment and some other lawmaking that was going on in our state capitol to try and prevent citizens from putting ballot initiatives that deal with the state constitution to voters.
George W. Bush opposes raising the minimum wage from its 1997 level, while John Kerry supports an increase.
I think for a lot of folks that are behind this effort, the hope is that because this is such a popular issue and there's so many people who are supportive of it, that it will help with voter turnout.
Gowdy Wright believes increasing the minimum wage will have a positive ripple effect for many Florida workers.
those folks who make minimum wage will be directly impacted, but those folks who might make slightly higher than minimum wage, many of those employers will feel inclined to raise their wages as well.
The restaurant industry and the Florida Chamber of Commerce are opposing the ballot initiative. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Sometimes it's bad when the going gets tough. Can we look in the mirror?
And welcome back.
Yeah, we wanna give up.
Yeah, but don't give up. And the going is gonna get tough, but hey, we have to bring democracy back to America. You and me. It's our job. It's our destiny. It's our work. You have the power. You have the power to create change in America. It's not, you know, I just sit here and rant on the radio. But we, all of us, you know, get out, register people to vote, spread the word, wake people up, participate in the political process, send $25 off to your favorite candidate or whatever you can afford, $5, $5 million, you know, whoever you are. George Bush last night, he says the AQ Con network has been brought to justice. Did you hear that? He's bragging about, you know, his successes in the war on terror. The AQ Con network has been brought to justice. Kind of overlooking the fact that the AQ Con was this the head of the Pakistani Build the Bomb program, right? He was the top Pakistani nuclear scientist. Good buddies with the guy who was the head of ISI, which is the Pakistani Secret Service, who just happened to be in Washington, D.C. on 9/11, and had just happened just shortly before that to have sent $100,000 to Mohammed Atta. This from a nation ruled by Pervez Musharraf, a military dictator who overthrew a democratically elected government. And when it was when it turned out that Khan had been selling nuclear technology, nuclear secrets, nuclear knowledge to Iran and North Korea, nothing was done. Nothing was done. Khan is still walking around loose. Nobody has been fired. Nobody has been arrested. Nobody has been prosecuted. Period. You know, because this guy apparently, either he was doing what he was doing with the permission of Musharraf because it was bringing big bucks into the country, or he's got something on Musharraf and he's blackmailing him. But the bottom line is, Pakistan's not going after him, and we're not leaning on them to. In fact, George Bush has said, okay, you don't want to go after him, no problem. And yet, in the debates last night, he says he's been brought to justice. Another one of these, does this guy know what he's talking about, or does he think that we're stupid moments? Another, you know, as I'm watching it, it's slack-jawed. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Brad for our music, to Ira for engineering it, to Shelby for streaming us around the world, to Ben for our archives at White Rose Society, Mike Toth for our archives at home, the folks in our chat room, and to you. See you on Monday. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small town.